FM's Cash Machine.
With your opportunity to win big again today, just like yesterday, €30,364.07. So for your chance to win, text RED to 57557. That's RED to 57557. It'll cost you €2.50 plus your standard message rate to play. You got to be over 18 and you're playing across the Go Loud network of stations. Now, full terms are on redfm.ie. So get the text in by 3. Cash Machine randomly picks one entry. If you get the call during the Ciara Evans show this afternoon, know the amount, answer the phone within 5 rings, and you'll win the lot. €30,364.07. So text RED to 57557 and good luck to you. That's exactly what Nora Collins did yesterday. And she wrote down somewhere the over 50 grand, and then she got the call. Have a listen to this yesterday. A little bit of clip with Ciara Evans yesterday afternoon.
I'm in shock. I cannot believe that I've won so much money. Oh my God, it's unreal.
Nora, you are the winner of €50,590.12.
Oh my God, it's unreal. Thanks so, so much. I just can't believe it.
And she joins me by phone. Nora, good morning.
Hi, Neil.
€50,590, and we can't forget the 12 cent. Has it sunk in yet?
No, it's still unreal. I can't believe I could actually win so much money. It's unreal.
Well, you did, and now it's about how you're going to spend it. But just before that, tell me about the day yesterday. Where did you hear the amount? How do you hold on to the number? How does that work for you?
I heard the amount on your show. I was on my way over to my daughter's house in Macroom, and I heard it, and I got there, and it was in my head to enter it. I get the text messages as well.
Where did you write it down? So, did a little birdie tell me you wrote it down on your arm or something?
I did. I wrote it down on my arm. And my
come here, you're real old school, Nora, aren't you? Like myself.
Yeah, writing it down, the pen and paper, yes.
Write it on your arm or your hand, or put an X on on your wrist or something.
Yes, yes. I wouldn't be fast enough, because I was thinking if I get the call, I won't get to the message fast enough to find the amount. So.
Oh my God, you got the call. Some people think it's a prank or a hoax or a wind-up, you know what I mean? But it wasn't.
Yeah, I did at first. I thought it was a wind-up,
really. I'm delighted for you. Will you spend it on anything in particular, I wonder, over 50 grand?
I'd probably change the car, go on a holiday, look after the grandchildren, definitely. I'll have to do that.
Well, there's plenty to go around.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's great. I'm thrilled. Absolutely thrilled.
I'd say you're the talk of Ross Carberry, I'd say, huh?
I think so, yeah. My phone has been hopping since with messages and well-wishers. It's brilliant.
Well, maybe you'd like to organise a big party inside Nolan's pub of an evening and buy everybody a drink.
Yes, I'd like to do that too, yeah.
All right, well, congratulations. Thanks for listening and enjoy the money, all right?
Thanks, Neil. Thanks a million.
Bye, Nora.
Cork, there is no better place. It's time to talk.
The only way to get anything done in Cork is down to Neil Prendeville,
Fair play.
Talk to Neil Prendeville.
That's a Cork threat at this stage, I think.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I just love Cork people.
Conversation that matters.
You better believe it. Get involved in the conversation. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. She might go off and buy herself a Mercedes. Why not? Anyway, listen, paper-wise, far be it for me to give you doom and gloom with regards to the month of February, but the statistics are out, and the Star this morning says that last month was officially a washout. Met Aaron confirming that almost the entire country was hit with above average rainfall. Well, we're on the western seaboard of Europe, and the Atlantic's on our doorstep, and it's baiting away at us. So that's the way it goes. But you know what? March and April will be better, and before you know it, we'll be into summertime. fingers crossed for the summer, I hear you say. You know what I always think? I think when the cruise liners start coming into Cove, and I think that's not too far away, Shea Machine might check that for me. As soon as the cruise liners start coming into Cove, you kind of know that the summer has arrived. Yesterday was an astonishing day because Siobhan Rahilig just wasn't going to sit on her hands anymore, and she had a blistering counterattack against the media minister, Catherine Martin. That makes a lot of the front pages today. New RTE chair will walk into a firestorm. That's a man by the name of Terence O'Rourke, formerly of KPMG. He takes over the chair of the RTE board today. It's kind of, some say it's a tough job, but it's not actually, because he can only improve things. It's kind of good to go into something that's broken and fix it, don't you think? But anyway, the issue regarding Catherine Martin and Siobhan Rahilig is what's dominating much of the papers, because she wrote and released a 2,300 word assessment of all of the events, including her thoughts on the media minister, Catherine Martin, herself. And it is a scathing criticism. She calls her a hands-off media minister. And that is very worrying. If we as punters look on and we hear somebody saying that, you know, this is a hands-off minister that relies and listens to everything that her advisors and her civil servants tell her, that's not what we want, really, is it? We want a roll-the-sleeves-up minister who gets stuck in. They say that Stephen Donnelly is a get-stuck-in minister. They say that Simon Harris is a get-stuck-in minister. That's what I was reading last night, anyway. So instead of yes, minister, the front of the Mail this morning has ouch, minister, accusing Catherine Martin of being hands-off, and that there was an enforced dismissal planned against Siobhan Rahilig that also included, my understanding of it was that also included using the appearance on prime time regarding the refusing to give a vote of confidence in the chair of RTE at the time. So a hands-off minister enforced her dismissal, damning critique of her version of events, and that she couldn't remain silent. And then Fiona Sheehan gets rightly stuck in The Independent this morning. He says, we have a bungling, hands-off minister who hides behind her army of civil servants. And Siobhan Rahilig gave some examples. You kind of painted a very vivid picture. I'm reading Fiona Sheehan's copy in The Independent today. The minister who didn't query any of the exit packages herself, refused, this is very interesting, refused to tell people to pay their television license when RTE and I believe the board were saying, minister, you need to come out and ask people and tell people that they must pay their television license because many people are refusing. And the minister, words to the effect of, I'm not going to tell people what to do. So refused to tell people to pay their TV license, failed to appoint board members and delegated through her civil servants, and had a plan to get rid of the chair, which ultimately came to fruition. Now, one of the issues, of course, with failing to engage or delegating through her civil servants is that the chair of RTE said that she found it frustrating when she understood that she wouldn't actually have as much direct contact or connection with the minister and would have to go through civil servants and department officials instead. But then she went on to say that it actually worked quite well. And when I heard those words, it actually worked quite well. And also, Terry Prone picked up on this in the Examiner yesterday as well. It meant that even without the minister, everything seemed to work quite well. So you have to wonder as to who's in charge. Is it the minister or is it the civil servants? So a license to kill on that story is the front of this morning's Mirror. Ex-RTE boss hitting back. And they make a big deal about Minister Catherine Martin not asking people or instructing people to pay their television license. So that's the story for you. There's a lot of other stories making the papers today, and one of them includes the sad loss of life of John Murphy at the age of 41. He died some months after the explosion down at Stryker in Carrigtwohill. You recall that. We dealt with it very much as it was an unfolding story. They were working on the roof at the time, Mr. Murphy and a pal of his, working with a colleague on equipment on the roof of Stryker when there was an explosion. Both of them were injured, and John Murphy allegedly suffered severe and extensive blast and burn injuries. I say allegedly, because this has now gone to court, because the family of the man who died at the Stryker explosion has launched a legal action. 41-year-old father of three from Watergrass Hill died in June last year, 2 months after the explosion itself, and Cantlin solicitors have been instructed now by Eileen Murphy over the death of her son, who it's claimed sustained life-threatening injuries as a result of the explosion. In fact, counsel for the Murphy family through Cantlin's said that John Murphy had burns to 75% of his body and had a very painful, horrific and lingering death. So that's a story from the court reports in this morning's Echo. There are other big international companies making the news this morning, not just Stryker in that regard, but also Apple, who owe us, is it 13 billion or 16 billion? And we can't get it off them. Now they also have to pay, well, they want to give it to us, but the Irish government doesn't want it. But Apple now have to pay 1.8 billion in fines. The EU has fined Apple nearly 2 billion euro for breaching antitrust rules. What that means, thank you so much, the amount actually is 13 billion they owe us. But the 1.8 billion is a fine because apparently the tech giant Apple was thwarting competition, you know, disruptors, if you like, competitors like, say, for instance, Spotify, from advertising that they had cheaper charges, say, than Apple products. So they were charged last year with preventing the streamer Spotify and others from informing users of cheaper payment options outside of the Apple App Store. And of course, I suppose you could call that anti-competitive. It's a big competition going on in America. It's Super Tuesday at the moment. Looks like as if Donald Trump is one step closer to returning to the White House. But you know how politicians use songs? They're almost like they're calling cards or they're anthems. I remember Bill Clinton used a Fleetwood Mac song, Don't Stop. I think, and I can't remember off the top of my head what Barack Obama did, but they all do it. But apparently the one that Donald Trump is using at the moment is Nothing Compares to You by Sinead O'Connor. But Sinead O'Connor's estate, which would include family members, have lashed out at the Don now and said, Nothing Compares, screw you. Take a run and Trump, two of the headlines in the Red Top, so you know where this is going. They don't want Trump, whom they call the devil, using the iconic O'Connor hit at the rallies. So some of the songs in the past included musicians who opposed Donald Trump using their music. Adele told him to back off. Aerosmith told Donald Trump to back off. The Beatles, and particularly George Harrison's estate, told him to back off. Was he using Here Comes the Sun? Springsteen did it. Creedence did it. As in Creedence Clearwater Revival, one of my all-time fave bands. Eddie Grant did it. Elton John, Guns N' Roses, Isaac Hayes. It goes on and on and on. So, like, musicians against Trump is what it is.
There's a whole Wikipedia article that I love some musicians who oppose Donald Trump's use of their music, and that is a Wikipedia article on its own. It goes on for ages. Johnny Marr,
Luciano Pavarotti, Neil Young,
Nickelback. Sure, who says Nickelback is the authority of music?
Ozzy Osbourne,
Panic at the Disco,
Phil Collins, Prince, Queen, R.E.M. Rolling Stones don't use our music.
You can't say that Trump's, or at least his advisors, don't have an eclectic taste of music. I mean, there's everything there from Panic at the Disco to Pharrell Williams, R.E.M. to the White Stripes.
How would Donald Trump use YMCA at a convention rally?
She's still considering legal action for the use of YMCA. That's amazing. YMCA would have gotten Donald Trump of all people?
One of the longest Wikipedia articles I've seen in a long time. Okay, thank you for that. Other news this morning. This is tragically sad. It is so, so sad. It has to do with the story in court of an alcoholic father and mother. The mother died. A chronic alcoholic father left his 11-year-old daughter pleading with him for assistance after her mother lay dead in the apartment. I know it's awfully upsetting to be saying this out of the morning, but her mother lay dead for 4 days. It was during COVID. The father, a chronic alcoholic now, has been jailed for what they call just shocking misbehavior. And it was too serious an incident not to avoid a custodial sentence. So the judge sent the dad to jail for 3 years and suspended the final 20 months. But it's awful to hear. So both of them had chronic alcohol addictions. The mother, the wife, collapsed. He continued drinking. The child was begging and pleading with her father for help with her mother after she fell. But the mother, who had a long-term alcohol problem, died. But the poor daughter continued to try and care for her. For 4 days, she was bringing her blankets, bringing her food. She was dead. And eventually, after 4 days, sought the help from the neighbors. It's heartbreaking because the dad no longer drinks now. He's sober. And he no longer has any care of his daughter. But he told the guards and the court as well, he remembers nothing. He said alcoholism turned him into from a monster. It's awfully, awfully sad. Tragic death and, you know, the impact of alcohol and alcohol addiction. Then there's another fella by the name of Lornas Kamentauskas. He makes the court reports overnight from Liam Heelan. He's from Blackpool. He was in court, right, yesterday, and he gave a sworn statement in courtroom number one not to drive while his case was before the court. And he took the oath in the witness box and he gave the undertaking not to drive. So when he was returning then from the witness box down to the body of the court, the judge told the accused that this is no laughing matter. The judge said that Kamentauskas was laughing to others in the courtroom. Now, Kamentauskas' solicitor suggested that it might have been nerves rather than anything else. But the 21-year-old, incidentally, was charged with driving without a license, driving without insurance, giving a false name to the Gardaí when asked to produce his license. So we have to await the court's decisions on all of those. But anyway, that's the deal inside in the court. And shortly after the case was adjourned, the sergeant, John Kelleher, called in Garda Ken O'Connell to give evidence in relation to a matter which he said should be brought to the attention of the court. This was after it had been adjourned. And Ken O'Connell, the guard, said, I was literally standing at the door of the court and I heard the young man saying to another group of men outside the court that he had just given an undertaking not to drive and he said he was going straight back to the road to drive again. Garda O'Connell said that he then approached him and asked him to confirm if he had just told the other men that he was going to be straight back onto the road despite the undertaking not to drive. And Garda O'Connell said, the 21-year-old Kamentauskas replied, I did, yeah, I'm the man. And then started laughing. So Ken O'Connell, the guard, was brought back into court. And of course, the judge was told this. So that evidence then from outside the court has now been noted on the court file in relation to Kamentauskas. And we'll see what happens when he's back in court for a very serious charge. And it goes to show, as usual, in many, many things involving interaction with people, never open your mouth unless you know who's actually listening. Papers this morning then have a lot of coverage when it comes to the two referendum decisions that will be made on Friday. I'll come back to that. This has come down very much to one or two very serious issues that people are divided on. The issue of care. So this would be changing the wording with women in the home, you know, where it says mothers shall not be obliged by economic necessity to engage in labour to the neglect of her duties in the home. So the new amendment to that would say that the state recognises the provision of care by members of the family to one another. Here's the issue with that for some people. They're saying that this will allow the HSC and the government off the hook if there is a family member who does need care, if they have profound disabilities or illnesses or what have you. So that's the issue in one aspect with regards to that kind of a vote, if there was a vote yes to change it. Meanwhile, of course, the Social Protection Minister counteracts that. Hedda Humphrey says that she'll actually be able to push for more supports for carers in the budget if the referendum for care passes this Friday. So a yes vote would mean carers would get more supports. Now, there'll be many carers listening to me right now, and I'd love to get your thoughts on that in particular. I had one call yesterday on the worry of being a carer to a family member. But this has become a very sticky issue with regards to at least one of the referendum decisions. Then I see the Irish Times reminding us, if we live in Dublin, Galway, Limerick, or most importantly in Cork, that if we get out of our cars and we walk or we cycle or we do a thing called wheeling, we will take 600, or the equivalent of 680,000 cars off the road every day. Now, much of that would be weather related, wouldn't it, as to whether you walk or you cycle or you wheel. I didn't understand what wheeling is, but apparently wheeling, when I see it, it makes sense, is the use of wheelchairs or strollers. But it's nearly 700,000 cars off the road if we just get off our butt inside in the motor car and walk, cycle or wheel. And then last night, and I'll come back to this in the next few days, we get an opportunity to look at Botox, because there was the RT Investigate show last night, and it was pretty harrowing and pretty worrying, particularly when you see business owners saying you don't need to sterilize the needles with Botox because I'm only using a very small insulin needle. Why? Like, as if that matters. I mean, you think of the different infections you can get from stuff like that. Anyway, apparently there are Botox parties as well. And apparently it's even more dangerous if you go to a Botox party and you've had a lot of liquor and you get the injections after alcohol. So it's a story that's picked up in the Mirror today. And then how we talk to children can have a huge impact on them in later life. And I know we spoke about this last week when we were talking about the words that maybe aren't acceptable anymore, like calling a woman love or darling, that it can be dealt, can be deemed to be condescending. Remember we spoke about that last week? But there are other words now that I suppose they imprint thoughts or maybe, you know, maybe future behavior for people as children. If you're a small young girl and you're called words like, you know, cutie, or that you're sweet, or, you know, boys then, on the other hand, would be, the young boys would be called, you're cool, or you're brave, or you're a genius, or you're innovative. So the brave, cool, genius and innovative words apparently are twice as likely to be attributed to boys when people are talking about boys or saying things about young boys or little fellas, but not as many girls. Girls are seven times more likely to be given an attribute like, you're so sweet, you're so beautiful, you're so cute. And that, of course, is imprinted in their brain. You know, they remember that. And in future life then, it stifles their creativity. Your thoughts on that are welcome as always. Text 0868 104 106.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Okay, I'll get stuck into calls in a second. I know Aisling is standing by. I was just listening there. They were talking about what to watch on Netflix. You got all of these different things in front of you and you don't know what to watch. And there's so much stuff. You just say, oh my God. But there's a show actually, and I hope to be able to talk about it sometime in the future. And it's called Jury Murder Trial. It's on Channel 4. Anybody watching it? It's just insane. It's insane. There are four episodes to it. I've watched all four. There's no spoiler alert needed here. I'm not going to give anything away. Suffice to say, there was a real murder, and it was before the courts. And what they did was they recreated it with two juries. Neither jury knew that there was another jury. One was the blue jury, one was the red jury. And the trial was heard by two juries unbeknownst to each other. It was a man who was before the court. He was accused of murdering his wife with a big lump hammer. And the whole deal around was as to whether it was murder or manslaughter. And it takes a really deep dive into the jury system. So I hope that people are watching it. And at some stage, it'll be okay to talk about it. It's probably a little bit early yet because people are working through the episodes. But it's worth a watch, lads. It really and truly is. It's just worth watching. It's actually quite riveting to watch. It's called Jury Murder Trial. It's on Channel 4, wherever you get your TV shows. It's very different in other countries, like the Danish system, where you are paid. You know, in Denmark, you are actually a full-time juror for 12 months. And you're paid a wage for those 12 months and you deal with multiple trials. Some are saying that the jury system is the way to go. Others are saying that it should be taken out of the hands of lay people and that it should be different professionals should be dealing with it. But anyway, it's called Jury, the Murder Trial, and you should check it out because I'd love to be able to chat with you guys. And I don't want to spoil it for anybody who's watching it at the moment. Massive response yesterday. Many people chipping in and having their tuppence worth regarding the referendum on Friday. So we will have two different votes on Friday. One will be the family amendment, and that will be the first one. And the second one then is the care amendment. And the care amendment is the one that has the wording from the original constitution regarding the mother in the home, that she gives the state a support without which the common good cannot be achieved. The state endeavours to ensure that mothers shall not be obliged by economic necessity to engage in labour to the neglect of their duties in the home. That will all be taken out and it will be changed that the state recognises that the provision of care by members of the family to one another by reasons of the bonds that exist between them gives society the support, etc., etc. Now, one of the issues with that, of course, that has come to light over the past few days is regarding people who care for a loved one. That the state would have an opt-out clause and the HSE would have an opt-out clause as well, whereby they could say, well, the Constitution now states that the provision of care is by members of the family to one another, and there is ne'er a mention at all in the Constitution of the responsibility or the input from the state or the health department or government services to help with that care. Particularly if parents get old or elderly or die, then who looks after the care of a loved one? So it's very vague for some people, particularly those that are carers. Aisling, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
That's just by way of introduction, but I think you get what I'm trying to say, do you?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, because there's also an article in the papers this morning, which I'll come back to, from a gentleman who says that we will become an apartheid state if we vote yes to that actual referendum change. And he himself is a carer, and he goes on to say it will give the HSE an out when we will ask them for help. They say, well, that's a family matter now, and it's in our constitution. Your thoughts?
Yeah, that's everybody's concern. Just to give you a tiny bit of background, I'm a carer to my son who's 18 years old. He has severe to profound intellectual disability, and he is nonverbal. He's a wheelchair user. He requires around-the-clock nursing care. He's edge-fed around the clock, and he's on a lot of medication, spends a lot of time in hospital, and he needs me 24/7, and if I'm not with him, he needs a nurse. So I am knee-deep in caring, and for 18 years a carer. So when this referendum came up, I started looking into it, and the word strive just... It was such a disappointment, because it's no different than endeavour. It just means try. And we all see how the state endeavour and strive. The scoliosis crisis at the moment is one example. We need something concrete. Have something wishy-washy.
It is an interesting word, actually, that's plunked in the middle of it, that the state shall strive to support such a provision that the family will give caring to one another. It doesn't say we shall support such a provision or we will support such a provision.
No, it doesn't, and that's the issue many people with disabilities and carers have. People with disabilities haven't even been mentioned, and a lot of people have said to people with disabilities, oh, this is a carer issue. That's a ridiculous statement, because where there's a carer, there's somebody who's being cared for, and in my case, that's a person with a disability, and in most cases, it's a person with a disability.
So would you explain to me, how would things change then? What's the worry?
Well, the worry is that it's going to be totally left to the family. I'm a lone parent carer. If something happens to me, I'm absolutely terrified of the future. I'm 50, but there are like 500 plus carers are in their 80s and they're caring for their adult children. Can you imagine being an elderly person in your 80s, not knowing what's going to happen to your child, and then this being rushed through and realising that, oh, there's nobody to care for my child? And I mean, that's what's happening. I have a daughter too who's 20, but as a sibling of a child with huge needs, she's already had to deal with a lot, and I would never expect her to step into my shoes and care for her brother. Like, it's 24/7 care, you know, and if you can't get a nurse to take over, you can't even go to the shop. So like, it's a serious job.
What is expected to happen, sadly, if the parents are the parent of a severe to profound intellectually disabled son or daughter, if that parent passes away?
Well, there at the moment there's like crisis beds in respite homes or in residential homes, but there aren't enough. So in fact, they're usually taken up by a crisis. So what has been happening for years is people have ended up in nursing homes. So young adults are ending up in nursing homes. And I myself, because Jack turned 18 in July, was offered nursing home for Jack for respite. So this isn't just something that, oh, could happen in the future. This is happening now. So this is the straw that broke the camel's back for carers and people with disabilities. We cannot take any more. We are on our knees. We fight every single day for every single thing. I'm talking everything. So carers' allowance is means tested. You fight for equipment. I'm waiting currently for a wheelchair for my son. You fight for respite. I'm waiting for respite for my son. You fight for everything. You fight for health care. We're on waiting lists for years. It's incredible, the fight. And then the means test is ridiculous. I'm on carers' allowance. because I'm poor enough. So I get €248 a week. My son is on disability allowance. He gets €232 a week. And I mean, if you think of what the pub payment was, that was €350 a week because, oh, people couldn't survive on any less than that. Yet, oh, carers and people with disabilities, they don't need it. And the truth is, we need more funds to survive. We need warmer houses. We need different things that people who are neurotypical and not disabled need, you know. And the one major thing that people with disabilities are really worried about is that they will lose their autonomy. People with disabilities, just because they have disability, does not mean they want to live with their family forever. And does not mean they want to be supported by their family. You know, for my son Jack has severe profound ID, he's nonverbal and he's severely disabled physically. And, like, I would love for him to be minded by me forever. But I'm terrified of what would happen if something happened to me. And, you know, we don't have a security blanket. We don't have a safety net. So right now,
even with the way the Constitution is worded as it exists, doesn't give you any comfort if you're incapacitated or you pass away.
It doesn't, but it doesn't say it's the family's responsibility.
But now it would say it's the family's.
Now it says that. But even Leo Varadkar said on TV on Friday, I think, that he doesn't feel it's the state's responsibility. He does feel it's the family's responsibility to care for our loved ones. So if our Taoiseach said it, that's worrying. Roderick O'Gorman said, if the referendum passes, it will allow parents of people with disabilities to bring the state to court. That's, first of all, making people with disabilities like infants, because people with disabilities can take the state to court themselves. Obviously, in my case, I would be taking them to court for Jack. But people with disabilities are not being mentioned, and it's not fair.
Why are you being, and these are your words, we are being vilified online and abandoned by people who we thought would care?
Because initially, to be honest, I think people are changing their minds now, but initially we were being, tarnished as going along with the far right. And, you know, we're very progressive people. Like, I'm voting yes, no, and there's a whole cohort of people with disabilities and carers and allies online from the LGBTQI community, trans allies, everybody, lawyers, everybody. Okay. We have Tom Clonan, who's doing a great job as senator. We have Flack, Gareth Noble, solicitor. The Magdalen Laundries are supporting it, Inclusion Ireland. So there's a lot of people, some social democrats and people before profit, TDs, are now having a look. And we're hoping that the people in opposition at least will realise that actually a yes-no vote is more appropriate, because how can you possibly think that it's progressive if you're absolutely sidelining people with disabilities and carers? And, you know, carers exist because people with disabilities exist. Yeah. And, you know, we go hand in hand. And I have to say, we have a very unified front on this, and it's been very tiring campaign, exhausting, and we've made great friends and allies on social media, because we're all so together on this. And it's really nice to see. And I do see a lot of people are saying, oh, now that I look into it, I actually see why it's damaging to people with disabilities and carers.
Well, good to give you an opportunity to share your views this morning. For you, you will vote yes to the change with regards to the institution of marriage, but no to the care amendment that, as we just discussed there, which changes and recognises the provision of care by members of the family to one another. Appreciate that, Aisling. Do stay in touch.
Thanks so much for taking
the call for now. Keith Walsh, meanwhile, is yes, family lawyer, divorce, separation and maintenance areas that he deals with. So I'd be interested to get his thoughts on it. Keith, good morning.
Good morning to you. And just to say, I fully agree with Aisling, your previous carer, in relation to the importance of autonomy of people with either special needs or with disability, that it's really important that's acknowledged, that it's not their carers who should take cases, it's people themselves. And again, there's an equality clause under the Constitution that all people are equal, all citizens under the law.
But why should we make any amendment to the Constitution that will mean that people have to, as a consequence of that change to the Constitution, sue the state?
Well, I don't think that's what the change to the Constitution means. and I don't think that's the effect of it. The effect of the care amendment, as they call it, is twofold. The first bit is we remove an out-of-touch, out-of-date, anachronistic gender
woman
stereotype.
In the home, yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And also we then introduce this new language of care within the family. It doesn't deal with care by anybody else outside the family or the provision of care for people within the family. But it doesn't do, I think, what Aisling or some other people think it does, which is to prevent further rights being advocated for and lobbied for. And I think there's a lot of talk about saying what it does, what it doesn't do. But in terms of what it does, it's intended to simply recognise that the family, and particularly the different types of relations within the family. And I think that's been a bit slightly lost in translation.
But you're a lawyer. You're a legal man. If one looked at this as a contract, or if it was a contract for renewal of services by something or whatever, like if I was offered a contract that had words in it like "shall strive to support blah 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 blah," I wouldn't sign that contract because it's way too vague and it can be interpreted or reneged on by saying I strived but failed. I'm terribly sorry.
Well, first of all, there's nothing in there currently which gives any rights to carers within the family or outside the family, okay? Second of all, the Constitution is an overall symbolic document. It's a kind of big statement of intentions. And all that the new 42B does is it's only a recognition. It's not meant to be anymore. It's simply a recognition, the provision of care by family members to one another.
But isn't that document the Constitution constantly referenced in various law cases and all different sorts of matters? The Constitution always is referred to as being the Bible of law for the state?
It is, but it's also general and vague as well, and it allows different interpretations. But the problem is, if people vote no to this care referendum, what the result of it is there's going to be no change to the Constitution at all. And I suppose my point is, look, the best is the enemy of the good. This isn't what advocates for disability rights want, but it's better than what we currently have, and it also removes a discriminatory and a biased section in relation to gender roles within the family, which is the woman's place in the home, as they call it. But it also, I mean, Article 42B, the one about care, recognises care by fathers as well as mothers, by brothers as well as sisters, by grandparents and other people, and it recognises the modern family. And I think it's not, I think to look at it in isolation in terms of what it doesn't do it justice. And I think if we vote this down, we'll regret it. And I think there is a whole different lobby and voice to be heard there, but it isn't. We can only vote on what's in front of us.
Why do you say in some of your prose that I've seen that it's scaremongering?
Well, in terms of the scaremongering, what I believe scaremongering is by voting this down, and if you like, by doing a protest vote on this, that somehow a new government will bring in a new referendum, or this, people point to this Supreme Court, this magic Supreme Court case in April, which is going to change everything for carers. Voting no doesn't do any of that. And again, I wouldn't trust a politician's promise before an election about anything. I think we've to seize our opportunity now. So I'm only doing this on a pragmatic basis. And just to say, I've a daughter with special needs who suffers from Down syndrome as well. So I'm very involved in terms of the debate about disability rights. And I'm appalled at the lack of services that we get for our daughter while she's in school.
But then, never do you mind, not have the fear that some carers do, that in the event of them getting incapacitated, old or passing away, that the state could say, now I'll counter that in a minute with what Heather Humphreys is saying, but those that are worried say that the state could then say the Constitution now states that provision of care is by members of the family, which allows the government, state departments, and indeed the HSE off the hook with the residential setting for a loved one.
Well, I don't agree with that interpretation of it. It's only a recognition. It's not a duty. It doesn't create any obligation on the family to care for family members alone. But what it does do is, where that care takes place, it recognises it. And as I said, it recognises care by fathers, by grandparents, by sisters and brothers. So it's just a much wider view of it. And remember, we had one of the huge problems historically that we've had with the women's place in the home clause in the Constitution is it didn't protect women in the home either from domestic violence or from abuse or from economic abuse, or it didn't protect them outside the home. And it took until 1974 for women to get the social children's allowance in their name. The Family Home Protection Act only came in 1976. Domestic violence law only started in 1976 in this country. So the woman's place in the home has failed women throughout the 20th century. And I think both of my grandparents, grandmothers worked. One worked on a farm. One was a school teacher. They worked throughout their marriage, and they would be let down if we didn't get rid of it. And my own mother worked outside the home, and she always felt that her work outside the home, because she was working outside the home, other people who worked in the home felt she wasn't a proper mother, and she felt that throughout her working life. And that was the 80s and the 70s and the 90s. So okay. I think there's an opportunity that could be missed, and I don't think we're going to prejudice in any way carers or in this referendum. The problem is what carers want and deserve, I think, isn't in this referendum, and we have to vote with what's on the ballot paper and vote yes on Friday.
Okay, and that's yes to both, including the changes to the exclusivity of marriage.
Well, absolutely. In my day-to-day work, I see how marital and non-marital families are treated by the courts and by the law, and non-marital families are discriminated against. For a constitution not even to recognise the family outside marriage, when 40% of children are born outside marriage in this country, it really is deplorable, and it's completely unacceptable.
Okay. And you see the other arguments around this, including, I mean, like one of them, it might sound bizarre, was issues around polygamy or issues around people coming here as asylum seekers and refugees, then ultimately bringing vast quantities of family with them.
Exactly. That's where I mentioned scaremongering. That isn't going to be, in my very strong view, that is not going to be the outcome. Marriage in the Constitution is based on a marriage between two people, not three people. That is, if you like, one of the ways that we will compare durable relations. Cohabitants, which we currently have a law since 2010, which give rights to people who are not married but who live together, that only ever refers to two people. I think there's almost no chance that a polygamous relationship could be recognised as a durable relationship. And I've read everything.
It doesn't say anything in the change, though, that a marriage is two. Two people.
No, but the Constitution says it already about marriage. But durable relations is in the same section as marriage. And remember, the special place of marriage is not done away with. Marriage still has a special place in the Constitution. So it is, if you like, the gold standard of relations. But what the amendment does is it changes, it acknowledges, and again, it recognises other relations, non-marital ones, which are really essential, and particularly for lone parents.
But it doesn't say anywhere that a durable relationship, and that's a very vague word that people are worried about, the word durable, that it is between two people. It doesn't say that it's two, three or four, nor does it say that the foundation of marriage, because in some societies, particularly men, can have more than one wife.
Well, those marriages are not legal in Ireland, and they've never been. And our history and the settled law in Ireland up to now has never recognised polygamous marriages. It's not going to start now with this change to the amendment simply because it doesn't say durable relationships between two people. That isn't going to happen. But also immediately before, or in the wording, it says the state recognises the family, whether founded on marriage or on other durable relationships. Clearly the durable relationships relate to marriage, but they also can relate, in my view, to relations, family relationships where there is no father, or there's two fathers, or there's two mothers, or there's a grandparent, or there's an uncle, or
well, absolutely,
a family member.
That is why we voted for same-sex. And that's really important.
Yeah,
absolutely. Okay.
It's really important that we acknowledge different forms and what they call modern families, because that's the world we live in.
All right. Thank you. Much obliged for your contribution, Keith Walsh. Yes, yes. Your thoughts are welcome as always. Text 0868 104 106 back after the break.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Tomorrow morning, around about 9:30, we'll have the Minister Michael McGrath on air. So if you have a question, and of course the government very much advocating a yes vote in both referenda on Friday, but if you have a question you'd like me to put to him, you can text 0868 104 106 or email neil@redfm.ie. Already the Social Protection Minister Heather Humphreys has said that she will be able to push for more supports for carers in the budget if the referendum on care passes this Friday. She says the government government will review the means test for carers, with strong suggestions from the Fine Gael minister that more carers will be able to access payments after this review. Apparently, a group of civil servants from the Department of Social Protection will review, and should be reporting back before the end of the year. So the yes vote, according to Minister Heather Humphreys, would mean carers would get more support. So again, you know, it's important to have balance in this case, but I think that many people would make the point, and maybe I shouldn't even make it myself, that, you know, what politicians promise isn't always delivered on. I think that one of our callers, you know, just a couple of seconds ago, Keith, who was on air, as a solicitor himself, says that people can continue to advocate as carers. But Aisling, who was on with me just before him, Aisling said that she was listening and she said a lot of what Keith is saying is just wrong, especially on the point that a yes vote doesn't stop them from advocating. She says that anybody who's a carer is sick to their back teeth of advocating and trying to intervene and get better things for their loved ones. She says, we want rights, not charity. We need to ratify the UN Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities, and this moves away from that. And just keep those texts coming, text 0868 104 106. But Richie says, these referendums are dishonest to the core and are designed to emotionally manipulate people. From holding them on International Women's Day, to the emotive but ultimately meaningless sloganeering, to the portrayal of the yes side as being caring and inclusive, while portraying the no side as being regressive and negative. Irish people lead busy lives and haven't got the time to research the legal nuances of constitutional law. When issues are not immediately clear, we tend to act on emotion. And our emotion tells us, with regards to two words, yes and no, are by their very nature either positive and negative. When in doubt, decent people tend to act in a way they believe to be positive, and in this case, voting yes. When the question is some version of, should we replace these relevant articles? They want to do the right thing, particularly if they don't understand, he's saying. Some version of a tick box A to retain or a box B to remove might be a better alternative that could mitigate the subconscious, instinctive and exploitative impulses to do the right thing and want to be seen to do the right thing by voting yes. It's an interesting way the way the mind works, according to Richie by email to Neil at redfm.ie. Back after 10.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Regardless of what the Constitution says or will say about mothers, we are heading into another weekend of Mother's Day, and we have some great prizes across the week, courtesy of ourselves and the Cork International Hotel. It's a great location for stay, park and fly. If you're flying in and out of Cork Airport, or if you're travelling a distance to get to the airport, stay overnight, park up the car and fly next door. So you can also treat your mammy to, or indeed that special someone, to a gorgeous overnight stay in a deluxe room yourself, or you could win one with me for the Cork International Hotel. Sunday lunch, this is every day, Sunday lunch for two in the New Yorker Bar at the Cork International Hotel, an overnight stay in one of their deluxe rooms, breakfast the following morning in the Atlantic restaurant, and then 2 hours private access to the in-house cinema, which they have at the International Hotel, and you can enjoy a movie with your loved one there. So it's a lovely, lovely gift every single day this week, courtesy of ourselves and the Cork International Hotel, for the mammies in your life. I haven't stayed over there, but I certainly have had Sunday lunch there in the New Yorker Bar last year, and the food is delishamundo. So we're asking you to share your funniest or your most mortifying mammy moments. And we had a great laugh with it yesterday. It was really, really real rib tickling. So keep those stories coming. The funniest, the most mortifying mammy moment or story about your mam. You can text 0868 104 106 or you can email Neil at redfm.ie. Please let your listeners know that there's an accident between Cloyne and Ballinacurra. The Gardaí just recently arrived. Nobody was hurt, but there's a car, or at least it was, stuck in the middle of the road. On Donald Trump, and it being Super Tuesday, and he now has the green light to run in the presidential election. It was a bit unclear up until this point. Hi, Neil. I don't know why stupid people mock Donald Trump. While he was in charge, the world was a better and a safer place. There have been three new wars and world mass illegal migration. He didn't bomb any innocent women and children like every other American president did in my lifetime. And Obama deported way more people from America than Trump ever did. Fingers crossed Trump wins this year. There would be no Ukraine war if Trump was in charge. Thank you for that text. In fact, Trump just said the very same thing there in the 10 o'clock news, that if he was president, there would have been no war in Ukraine and probably no issue regarding Israel and Palestine. Cars on or off the road as to whether or not we should be walking more. Is every country supposed to be electric by 2030, or is it just us? The population of Tokyo and Shanghai and New Delhi and places like that are using millions and millions of millions of cars. Every initiative we try in Ireland will absolutely do nothing to make anything better at all. We're just too small. In relationship to how we refer to boys and girls, I was told by a relative that a car company has asked their Irish cleaners not to use the word boy or girl while in conversation because some people are offended by it. How is it going, boy? And all right, girl, are no longer allowed. It's a joke just to appease a few idiots. And a final one then, somebody saying, The Jury, the show that I'm referring to, Neil, The Jury, the show about The Jury is finished. It was on over two nights. I know that it's finished. I've seen it all myself. I watched four episodes of it. I watched it over the two nights myself. But some people wouldn't be watching it live, and some would be watching it later, and some would be watching it by, you know, series linking it on Sky or whatever the case may be. In fact, Kevin is a typical example. He's only seen, is it one episode or two episodes? I've seen all four, and I want to give it a few days, because if I started talking about it now as a typical example of people who haven't seen the whole thing, I'd spoil it for you, wouldn't I? Totally spoil it for you.
Sorry, yeah, you would, yeah, sorry.
How many have you watched?
I only watched one episode last night, because they're long enough, like they're 45
minutes
each.
They're nearly an hour long, yeah, but I mean, I'm thinking maybe Friday might be an okay time to start talking about it.
Yeah.
Unless you want me to tell you.
No. Really don't, actually, no. Neither on there, or actually, could you do for me what Rory does for you with the tennis results, where I can just turn off the speaker.
I won't talk about it.
No, I think people, like, for us, like, there's three of us watching this, myself, my
what do you think of it so far? Mom.
Brilliant. I think it's really good. I have suspicions about who they're selecting in the jury, though. An awful lot of the jury seem to have, like, stories that connect personally with the case.
And for people who are just listening and didn't catch me just after nine, this is a trial with two juries,
yeah,
unbeknownst to each other, that there are two juries.
Yeah.
Keep an eye on one thing, will you, over the next few episodes?
You can't help yourself, can you?
No, I think it's okay. There will be one issue that keeps coming up all the time, and that is the use of the lump hammer.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I know that this is not entertainment, don't get me wrong. This is real world stuff.
Yeah.
Let me know if you think that they actually investigate or question enough about how the hammer was in the house and how it got from the workshop to the house.
It's one of the really interesting things, I think, just from the first episode looking at it, is some of the, they've actually been speaking to barristers and criminologists, and the amount of them who say, like, really, it's a lottery, you know. Okay. And, like, I've heard a story, and it's very quickly, like, about one guy who he was trying to break. You know, these guys do the speed runs in the cars, and they, you know, he did one in the UK, and they claimed that he had been caught by all these speed cameras, and they found evidence to basically say that half of them were turned off, and most of them weren't calibrated properly, and all their evidence was circumstantial. But he said he was pure sure that he was going to get put down, until the judge stepped in and said he's been to the Nürburgring himself three times.
He's been to?
The Nürburgring, the big long, 26 kilometer long, like, it's like an iconic racetrack in Germany where you can bring your own car, pay a toll and drive around it. They do actual motor racing.
And what's relevant in that with the judge?
The fact that the judge was into cars and into speed and into racing.
You can
himself.
Get a judge. You can get a judge or a jury.
You just get a judge and you get lucky, and that blows my mind.
Historically get a judge and be very unlucky.
That blows my mind. It blows
and
my mind.
Some solicitors and barristers will tell you that they know if it's a lucky judge or not.
They know depending on that. Blows my mind.
Okay.
I think that's amazing.
Okay. I won't say any more about it. I want to, but I'm trying to be fair to people. I keep my mouth shut.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show.
Okay, a lot of texts. A lot of texts. I'll come back to them in a few minutes' time, but I just want to stay with calls and WhatsApps for now. The Irish Constitution was ratified by the Irish people in 1937, so it's between 80 and 90 years old now. That's why back in the 30s you would have part of the Constitution saying that the state recognises that by her life within the home, woman gives the state a support without which the common good cannot be achieved. So it's saying, that's by and large saying back in 1937, that by her life within the home, woman gives the state a support without which the common good cannot be achieved. It's a very different world now in 2024 in many different ways, and they figure that that needs to be modernised. That's the Care Amendment, right? And I'm not talking about issues then involving looking after, say, for instance, a profoundly mentally or physically disabled or impaired son or daughter. It's just woman in the home. And on that basis, Caroline, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm good, I'm good. Yesterday, actually, I got very much reminded on air that there actually are quite a lot of women who are quite happy to be at home and to be doing the job of being what would have been deemed in the Constitution the home and the recognising the importance of the woman in the home. Is that the point you wanted to pick up on?
Yeah, that's the point I suppose I wanted to make, really. I mean, it said, you know, you had another speaker there on there a little while back, and he said that the language there was sexist and old-fashioned and archaic and all that. And that kind of annoys me when that's brought up, to be honest. Like, you know, we've had politicians saying that the article is an embarrassment and the whole thing. And like I just want to ask, like, is it an embarrassment that a quarter of a million Irish women want to stay, choose to stay at home? Like, that's the latest census figures. Do you know what I mean? And like, as far as I'm concerned, the article isn't sexist. It values my contribution that I'm making to society. I'm choosing to stay at home to raise my kids with my husband. And like several judges have said in recent years that actually, no, it doesn't chain women to the kitchen sink. Sure, we know that. Like, we've had two presidents and we've had women TDs and women in business and the whole shebang, you know.
It's choice.
And like, you know, and like, parents' duties are mutual. That's what the judges have said, that that implies that parents' duties are mutual towards kids. And you know what really bugs me, Neil? It really gets on my goat.
Yeah.
The whole thing that it's been held on International Women's Day, it's like, it's so patronising to my mind. You know, you have the government and you have the National Women's Council and people like that, and they're all telling us that they're pro-women, that they want to liberate us from the shackles of the dishwasher and whatnot. And like, all the time, at the same time, they're looking to remove that acknowledgement of that work that I do and actually remove the protection of my choice to stay at home if I
true,
want.
True, and there are women like you, and I spoke to them yesterday, but what about those that don't wish to be referenced like that, who are working outside of the home? Perhaps they manage to juggle both, but yet they're told that it's constitutionally their life within the home is all it should be. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Surely it needs to be, but no, in the sense that surely it needs to be modernized or be all encompassing of those that aren't, say, happy like you are. To be termed that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, but like, it just says by her life in the home. So that's just part of her life. Like, I'm a work from home mother as well as a stay at home mother. I've been a working mother. You know what I mean? It's never held me back. The article has never held me back. And it just values that little section of my life. I wear loads of different hats as I go through life.
I know. I'm delighted that you're on air talking about that. But the second part of the article, which will also be, if voted yes, will be deleted, is that mothers shall not be obliged by economic necessity to engage in labour to the neglect of their duties in the home. Does that not even that part need changing or modernising?
Well, like, it's seeking to, what the article at the moment is just seeking to protect women from the interests of big business and big corporations and all of that, that they, if they want to choose to stay at home with their kids, like, that they can, that they have that choice. It's not saying that they're obligated to stay at home if they wish. Like, the slogan, that's another thing that annoys me, that slogan that they have, a woman's place is wherever she wants to be. Of course the woman's place is wherever she wants to be. I mean, that's a given. That's completely a given. But she ought to have the choice. I mean, what I'm saying, right, is like, the governments are saying, they're pro-woman, but they're actually not. They're pro-big business. They're looking to remove that protection of my choice to stay at home. If they were really pro-woman, right, if they were really pro-woman, they'd be making it a little bit easier for a woman to exercise that choice if she wanted to. They'd be tackling the housing crisis. Like, it's disgraceful how much it costs to buy a house, like to own a house, you know, and they'd be making it, they'd be putting tax breaks in, they'd be making things a bit more affordable instead of spending 20 million on this thing where they could just as easily, if they wanted to make the thing a little bit more, we'll say all inclusive, just put in fathers as well as mothers.
But and not change. Because the Constitution from 1937 said it would endeavour to ensure that mothers shall not be obliged by economic necessity to engage in labour to the neglect of the duties in the home. But what did they do since 1937 to endeavour to ensure that? I mean, would their answer be, well, we gave children's allowance for every child you had? Is that it?
I'd agree with you. They could do a lot more, so they could. They really could. But, I mean, they don't need to delete it either, though. But, like, I suppose what that article has done is given a little bit of protection to women. I know it's been used in court cases. Like, there was a kind of court case, I think, back in 1992 where there was a divorce and the woman was home with the kids, and I think the ex didn't want to pay the alimony and he was made to pay the alimony on account of the Article 41.2. So, like, that's really important that protection is there, you know.
And is that an accurate figure?
Another case in the 1980s, I think, where there was tax laws that were meant to be there and they were meant to be trying to bring them in, and they were deemed unconstitutional because they were favouring people with no kids over people, you know, people with kids were being hard done by the number is
quarter of a million Irish women who choose to stay at home to be with their family.
That's right.
And that's not an insignificant number. Yeah.
And, you know, apparently Sue Dupreme did an opinion poll there not so long ago as well. And apparently if money were no object, and I know this anecdotally, right?
I'm interested in what you're going to say. If money were no object, what?
They'd stay at home. They'd two out of three women would actually stay at home if money was no object. Do you know what I mean? Like, talking to people anecdotally, talking to friends of mine, you know, maternity leave is up. Oh God, they're kind of dreading it. Do you know, when the kids are small, like, they're quite happy to. A lot of women are quite happy. Not saying all, but a lot of women.
Out of three women, if money were no object, would prefer to stay at home rather than pursue a career that perhaps they trained in, went to college in, worked hard to get up through the levels in the business or in the organization, they would have no issue. Two in three women would walk away from all of that.
Sure. Apparently, according to this opinion poll that was done by Sue Dupreme, apparently so. Two out of three mums would actually prefer to stay at home if money was no object. I'm not saying that they'd maybe stay at home for the rest of their lives. They might, you know, just maybe while their kids were a bit small.
Is it that two out of three women would stay at home during the child-rearing years and then go back to the workplace?
During the children are small, and then go back. You know, and I'm just saying, like, would it not be more reasonable for the government to try and honour that choice and to try and make that a bit more kind of accessible for people, you know?
Thank you, Caroline.
Instead of telling us they're pro-woman when they're not, basically.
Thank you for that. Much obliged, Shannon, standing by. First up, Adele. Adele, good morning.
Oh, good morning, Neil. How are you?
Good, thanks for holding. confusion, that's an interesting word. The wording is leading to confusion.
Oh, sure, absolutely. I mean, you know, you try to follow previous referendums, you knew exactly what you were pro or against. This one, you don't. So even though you try hard to educate yourself, there's so much confusion, there's lack of clarity. Even, you know, I would agree with Caroline there, all of this kind of obfuscation about the Constitution doesn't actually say a woman's place is in the home.
It does say that by her life within the home, she gives to the state a support without which the common good cannot be achieved.
Yeah, it absolutely does say that. But even the chairperson of the referendum commission, who is a judge, she has said that Catherine Martin was wrong. Catherine Murphy, I think her name is, the minister, when she said the Constitution sort of explicitly states a woman's place is in the home when it doesn't say that. And I also think there's just so much confusion.
It mightn't say those actual words, Adele, without wishing to cut across you, but it comes close enough saying that the state shall endeavour to ensure that the mother shall not be obliged to engage in labour to the neglect of their duties in the home. Is that not kind of saying, you know, your place is in the home?
No, I personally, as a woman that has worked part-time, full-time, reared a family, I personally wouldn't read it like that. And I think if they wanted to make the language more, you know, modern, they could have said maybe that the primary caregiver shall not be obliged by economic necessity to engage in labour to the neglect of their duties in the home.
I like that. Yeah, I like that. Idea. Yeah, yeah, that's good.
The primary caregiver, so that could be a grandparent, a mother, a father. But this taking the mother out of the constitution, I'm a bit afraid of it. And that's why, because I don't know enough about it, I would be saying to people, vote no, no, until the government come back in a less patronising way with two words on a placard, family and care, as if this whole thing could be boiled down to two words. It can't be. You know, Michael McDougall, previous Attorney General. Hello?
Yeah, no, I'm listening to you. I'm just lining up other calls. My apologies. I'm listening. Oh, Michael McDougall. I hope to talk with Michael McDougall before the end of the week. So, yeah, go ahead.
So nobody can say he doesn't know what he's talking about as a previous Attorney General. And he's saying this concept of durable relations, there's no legal definition for it. Nobody knows what it means. I don't know what it means. I can, you know, so...
He goes further by saying it would bring chaos to family law, chaos to tax, and chaos to family immigration law.
Yeah, because there's people, I don't know enough about it, but there is people that say that if it is your culture to have two or three wives under this durable relation, if it's inserted into our constitution, will they now be able to bring their two or three wives into the country?
Well, the solicitor just told me before 10 o'clock that Irish law wouldn't recognise somebody in polygamous marriages. It would be just the one.
Yeah, but he actually said, in my view,
you could probably bring all of the children from the different marriages to Ireland, perhaps.
At the moment, and I'm just trying to educate myself, because there's nobody else doing it. There's no opposition. It's everything from the government and opposition is yes, yes. So I think there's something called a family reunification scheme, which currently restricts, you know, to a spouse and children. But if we now change that to durable relations, will it mean that lots and lots of more people can come in under this new term?
Okay.
I don't know. So why can't we have a legal definition of durable relations that is not up to the courts to interpret? So that is chaos.
So you're going to vote no to both of them on the basis that they need to be clearer and less confusing and not have words like durable or strive in them.
Absolutely. Okay. Clear wording that we know exactly. Okay. And in terms of the second one, I would believe Tom Clonan and Aisling, your contributor earlier, before I believe
both
Andy
carers, including Tom Clonan himself, he is a carer for a child,
And they're going for a no vote. Oh, Heather Humphreys, why doesn't she already give extra money to carers? Why does she have to wait for this? This isn't going to change anything. So that's, again, more, in my view, disinformation application.
Right. Thank you. Much obliged, Adele. Let me talk, because Joanna's holding us on. Let me talk to Shannon on WhatsApp. Shannon, good morning. Your thoughts, please. Go ahead.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
Good.
I was just going to pick up, actually, on the family reunification law. That's that was a law brought into us by the EU. So what they're actually doing at the moment with this taking mothers and families out of the constitution is literally just to make sure that EU law is then, it's passable in Ireland. We can then do it. At the moment, with our current constitution, our constitution is superseding the EU law. So they need to flip it around. And that's how they're planning on doing it. We're going to keep getting this as well. It's going to be, this referendum's going to be given to us over and over again.
Right. I'm just hearing your thoughts on polygamy for the first time. Just develop that.
Yeah.
What exactly are you saying?
Well, a polygamist family could, of course, look for the rest of their, like in the family reunification laws, when non-EU citizens are allowed to enter an EU country and then bring in their extended family members.
Roderick O'Gorman confirmed.
So if you were in a polygamist relationship, then you could do that in Ireland.
But Roderick O'Gorman is quoted in January as saying that polygamous relationships are throuples Which would be man, two women, three men, three women, two women, two men, mm-hmm. throuples, will not be recognised under the proposed changes to the Constitution, even if, say, for instance, there's an example where polygamy is legal, say, in Lebanon, where men can have up to four wives. Yeah. It wouldn't fly here. It wouldn't be allowed.
It's grand saying it wouldn't be allowed here. We all know once this gets challenged in court, it's going to be a very different story. And as well, we're running a huge risk of our social welfare and stuff like that for one-parent families and carers just being taken. Because the reason that people are getting paid to stay at home with their children at the moment, but or stay at home and be a carer at the moment, is because of that wording in the Constitution.
No, I know that. I'll come to that in a second. But
then have the government has no more responsibilities to look after you at home.
That
so
I get.
Anyone who is on one parent family, it will be taken. And anyone who is on carers, it will be taken.
Yeah. Well, we're jumping there from one amendment to the other. But just going back, let me just go back to the original point where. In Irish law, my understanding of it would be that you would be in a relationship, whether it was marriage or a durable relationship, full time, living together permanently, both parties, like not sharing your life with three wives. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I completely understand that. But again, it's a complete grey area. They're not being specific on their wording at the moment.
Well, so Irish law doesn't recognise
relationship a durable relationship. I heard one TD say that how to recognise you're in a durable relationship is if both of you are sent a Christmas card. That's a disgrace.
I'm married.
Yeah. I'm married and I'm a stay-at-home mother. That's an absolute disgrace.
It wouldn't be me sending a friend a Christmas card and then claiming it that it's a durable relationship under Irish law. I mean, or is that an issue that the courts would have to decide? I mean, that's an extreme example.
We're looking at spending out millions in court cases by the wording that they're currently after delivering to us. They are going to go away. They are going to change the wording to something a lot softer, something a lot nicer, and hope that people are still going to vote. They need this to pass.
They're trying to encompass, say, for instance, the 40% of children in Ireland who are born outside of marriages. And therefore, we have an awful lot of people in very happy, loving relationships that aren't married and have no intention of ever getting married, not sending each other a Christmas card.
No, it's not sending each other a Christmas card. It's a Christmas card comes addressed to you both. That's how you recognise you're in a durable relationship. According to this TD.
Oh, okay. I don't know who it is that said that, because that seems.
I'm actually not too sure myself. I remember watching it on a playback.
Can I just say that Irish law, as it states, will not change when it comes to polygamous marriages. An application for spousal family reunification, where somebody is here and wants to bring a wife and children over, under polygamous marriage, where there's more than one, is not recognised in Ireland. And if somebody makes an application for a polygamous relationship, where all wives would come here and all children, that would be rejected.
Well, to the best of my knowledge, that's because we're polygamy is illegal here, to the best of my knowledge.
It is illegal.
You can't marry multiple people in this country because, again, our constitution is bound by Jesus Christ.
There is a thing called family reunification where somebody who is here can bring family over. Wife, husband,
but
children,
this is it. It's because of
mother,
the family reunification
father.
Law, which is why we're getting this to begin with. They need the family reunification law to supersede the Irish Constitution, and currently that's not the way it sits, which is why there's no opposition. So if you look at Sinn Féin at the moment, they're looking for you to vote yes also, and it is because they're also in favour of the EU.
One final point from you in your original text to me, you said every mother's rightful place when they become mothers is in the home. Are they your words? Yeah.
I'm a mother of three children, and I believe that this is my rightful place while my children are still young. They need their mom. There's no better place for me to be, and there's nowhere else I would rather be.
So, touching either of those articles that reference in both of them under the Care Amendment, woman. And mother, because that word woman and mother feature in both of those articles. You don't want those touched?
No.
Okay. Okay. Thanks for that. Much obliged. Thank you, Shannon. Text 0868104106. Back after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Get involved in the conversation. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. A selection of texts. Our constitution was written in blood by our patriots who sacrificed their lives for us and for this island. Why anyone would or could side on the corrupt government's push for a yes vote is unbelievable, says Patricia. Hi, Neil. No one was ever bothered by what the Constitution said. No one called for a change. It seems only the government really wants it changed. I just do not trust this government, so I will vote no. They are really pushing for it. No one was ever bothered, so why even bring it up? I'm sure everyone is fine the way things are. I'll be voting no and no. Save Ireland, protect our women and our families. Ireland was a better place before this government. I can't help but wonder if the people's vote will truly be accepted or if the government will just push through the changes to suit their agenda anyway. Let's not forget what the current government did to get into power. They themselves were not elected through the people's vote to put in the government we have. No, but isn't that the way always in many, many countries? It ends up like a cocktail or a coalition. Everyone should vote no to both of them, as we really don't know enough about them. Hopefully none of them will get through, says Marie. I'm surprised at your UCC law guest. This was from yesterday. Every day on Judge Judy, she says that if you want to avail of the benefits of the law, you should get married. So says Judge Judy. If you want to play house, don't expect the courts to clean up your mess, says Paul. And just another few here. Neil, don't you know that a durable relationship is a relationship of the is a relation to the €9 substantial meal in the pubs that kept COVID away. I just love that text, actually, because it goes to, you know, the heart of the matter for some people with regards to vagueness, using a word like durable. If Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, Sinn Féin, People Before Profit, the Greens and the Social Democrats are all saying yes, then you can be damn sure that I'm going to say no, says Dara in Blarney. To some extent, one wonders whether voting on Friday would involve protest votes as well. My opinion, the referendum is a test vote. The more important referendums are coming later on in the year. For example, they want to take out of the Constitution the right to own private property. Where does it say that? Where is any of that? I mean, Sinn Féin are talking about more ways of taxation. I get that. And one of them is a wealth tax. But where would they have any right to take away someone's right to own private property? I don't know, is that even worth fact-checking, to be honest with you. When you have a bent, corrupt government telling you to vote yes twice, with the backing of Sinn Féin, People Before Profit and the posh Democrats, then you should raise your concerns and make your decision to definitely vote no on both, says Conor and Ballinlock. And just one more for now. I agree that you are insulting women who want to give up work to care for their children. Do you know how hard it is listening to crying children, doing school collections, swimming lessons, doing the dinner? Kids who are sick want their mothers. We choose to do this for our children. I do not hope and wish that I did not insult any women by pushing back on people's points of view. That's my job. I'm not going to just sit around here agreeing and nodding with everything that anybody is saying, but I don't want it to come across as insulting anybody in any way, shape or form. I'm much more modern thinking than that. So please, listen, give me a little bit of credit. I hope it didn't come across that way by maybe countering the argument. Katrina's standing by. Joanna's first. Joanne, good morning.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
Thanks for your text. What's on your mind?
Well, it was just interested because, as far as I'm aware, EU law supersedes our law. We have to abide by EU law. And the EU have made it, since 2015, the Family Reunification Act. That includes the nuclear family, okay?
The nuclear family.
So a durable relationship can be argued in court by somebody with four wives. And if he drops dead tomorrow, that's four widows' pensions that taxpayers have to pay. That's a fact. EU law supersedes our law.
I don't know about that. I mean, I'd have to get on a constitutional.
What the paper is written on. Like, you just said there a few minutes ago that Roger Kilgarner said, oh no, that won't happen, we won't allow it. Would you trust this government now? Seriously.
You're asking me questions that are very difficult for me to answer, because anything to do with a referendum or any issue like that, I have to be, I hate saying it, because I don't sit on fences. But I have an obligation to counter and to give as much balance as I can. And that was a quote of O'Gorman's. I pass it on for what it's worth.
Do I
trust?
Also the man that in a tweet in sent out in 8 languages a tweet to welcome the whole world here. Look,
well, that was the stupid thing to do. That clearly yeah. got us into a lot of hot water when that went out around the yeah. world. Didn't help. Yeah.
And I think, Niall, honestly, I really do think Michael McDowell, the senator that's calling for no vote, I think he sees the danger of this for the durable relationships, like I just said. If you're entitled to bring in your family in here and you die and you have 4 wives, then they're entitled to claim widow's pension.
But I've just said over and over and over again that firstly, Irish law supersedes European law. And secondly...
No, it doesn't, Niamh. Well, that's why Brexit happened. That's why Brexit happened, because the British wanted to make their own rules, their own constitution. The EU supersedes our laws. If this referendum passes, because it's an EU directive reunification.
EU law is all very well, but members of the EU have the right to set their own laws and their own... Like, we have a different system of penalising people who speed, drink driving. We have a different court system with regards to how long you will go to prison for different sentences. We don't have a standardized welfare payment. We don't have a standardized minimum wage like the rest of Europe. These are all laws that we, no, maybe not yet. I know. But like reunification has been stated very, very clearly that we do not recognize polygamous marriages. And if somebody applied to bring
not
over.
Yet.
Well, yeah,
I'm trying to explain to you now.
I know not yet, but right now the law,
they're saying we have no choice but to bring all these people in because it's an EU directive. That's what they're telling us. We have no choice. This is what we're mandated or obligated to do. So therefore you're telling me that they're not going to turn around if this thing passes and says it's EU law, family reunification. Another thing I want to say.
No, because it's important to be accurate. You're entitled to a point of view. The European directive, which we've checked, which is the European Directive on Reunification, states that the European directive explicitly says that in the case of polygamous marriage, it is up to the member states to decide whether they allow it or not. It is for the member state to decide whether they wish to authorise family reunification for relatives or indeed polygamous marriages or adults with who are unmarried coming here with children overseas. All of these things, including polygamous marriages, are decided by the European Union state.
Yeah, and our government can, and as Michael McDowell has stated,
by the European Union states,
the discretion of a judge. It's at the discretion of a judge. If you go before a judge and you argue your case, I came in here to be with my husband. I have no income. He's after dropping dead. You telling me a judge is going to turn around and tell this person, oh, then we can't provide for you. This is the danger we're heading down. This is what Michael McDowell is trying to say, but he can't say it out loud. This is a possible consequence. As well as that, on the other one, deleting women. They were about to do it in the Dutch, were about to do it. They were replacing the word woman in their constitution with the neutral parent, gender neutral parent from which a child is born. This is the mad wokeness that this country is facing, that this government,
you know what, I'll have to check that line there you're talking about.
It's absolutely true. It's all over Twitter this morning.
I feel like
that they're pushing
Twitter
back.
I mean, Twitter isn't the law.
Well, I was on the Dutch website and I read the article. I was actually on their website.
Give me that line again that they were talking about gender neutral parenting.
It said the Dutch were about to replace the word woman with the gender-neutral parent from which a child is born.
Gender-neutral parent.
So therefore, they were taking woman, absolutely, yeah. Gender-neutral parent from which a child is born. So there were.
But a gender-neutral parent from which a child is born, my understanding of that would be born from a woman.
Absolutely, that's my point.
So why would they say gender-neutral parent from
Ireland
which a child is born?
Case. Ireland is a test case for this woke.
But this, that is protecting the rights of a woman who can give birth to a child but does not want to be referred to any longer as a woman or female.
Well, they're not going ahead with it now anyway because the people push back, thankfully. Then yesterday, before you cut me off, Radcliffe was live on the television. He said that he would look after his two sisters and their nieces and nephews if anything ever happened to his sisters, right?
Yeah.
The care amendment, okay? And he said he doesn't believe it's up to the state to provide care.
That is a worry.
Now, this is huge implications.
That is a worry.
Absolutely huge implications for our elderly.
Yeah.
All of this is so open-ended, okay? It can be determined different ways. You could be in front of a judge in a good mood. You could be in front of a judge in a bad mood.
Mm.
But we're at the mercy of the courts. This people need to wake up and see what's happening.
Okay.
There's a woman taking the government to court because they cut her carer's allowance because her husband got a rise in his job. That's why they're bringing this in, because this woman is taking the case to the Supreme Court. Okay? So people just wake up, open your eyes and see the bigger picture. Thanks, Niall.
It's good to talk. Niall. Thank you for that, Joanne. Happy to give you the opportunity to make your views known. However, you know, where it's need be, I have to push back or correct, particularly if I think there's an accurate statement being made with regards to terms of Irish law. And again, that's even difficult for me because we would need to fact check all of this. You know, you'd want to be a very, very learned solicitor or barrister or judge to be able to follow much of the law here, but we do the best we can. Back after the break.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now, 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
And you can be part of the conversation. Text 0868 104 106. Just this call, this side of 11. Katrina, good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Your thoughts on the two referendum amendments on Friday?
Yeah, I'm voting no anyway.
Okay, why?
Well, I'm voting no because I'm a working mother myself. I work outside of the home. I also work inside of the home as well, but, you know, I'm a nurse and I work outside of the home and I've never been held back by this article. You know, what this article actually does is it gives recognition to the amazing job that mothers do, and it gives them the choice to stay at home if they choose to do that.
Mm.
And they should be supported in this decision to stay at home.
And were you?
No, I would love nothing more to stay at home. And I suppose data shows as well, you know, there's an Amorek survey and the result is that 69% of mothers with children under 18 would like to stay at home. 76% of those feel that.
Was that the one that was done, the Amorek survey, or was that the separate one I had earlier on for Sudocream that said two out of three women would stay?
The Amorek one.
Two out of three women would stay at home if they had the choice.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And 76% of those feel undervalued by society in comparison to women who work outside the home. And 70% of mothers, they don't feel valued at all by society. You know, and there was also another survey done back in 2017, which the previous Minister for Children, Catherine Sapone, had held. And that found, I mean, we're forgetting about the children here. That found that only 1% of children wanted to be in childcare. You know, 99% of children wanted to stay at home with their parents. And I understand, myself included, that parents are unable to do that because of economic necessity, because of the price of housing, rents, the astronomical price of living that we have today. And, you know, I know people keep saying that the wording is outdated and they keep mentioning, you know, the duty of the mother inside the home. But if you look at the German constitution, and, you know, Germany, I think, is ranking number 4th in the world for being progressive.
Being pro what? Sorry, that broke up there. Pro what? Progressive.
That they're progressive, you know. It clearly states that marriage and the family shall enjoy the special protection of the state. It also says that the care and the upbringing of children is the natural rights of parents and a duty primarily incumbent upon them, and the state shall watch over them in the performance of that duty.
Yeah, but the proposed change to it now, forgive me, does state something similar. The proposed change to the Family Amendment states the state pledges itself to guard with special care the institution of marriage and to protect it against attack.
Oh, well, I'm not speaking about marriage. I'm speaking about the protection that it's giving to mothers within the home. And the duty
that changes, that it recognizes, Yeah.
Yeah, like I have a duty. I mean, I don't know why this word is being, you know, tossed about as if it's you know, it's old fashioned. I do have a duty. Once I have a child, I have a duty to look after that child to keep it safe. I have six children myself. My youngest is 4 months. I'm on maternity leave. You know, I have a duty when I go to work to look after my patients. The same way you have a duty to your listeners to not give out misinformation. You know, we all have duties in this world. I mean, I don't know why this word is being tossed around as if it's some old-fashioned thing. But I just want to point out one other thing as well, is that there's a lady called Victoria White, and she wrote an article, actually, she wrote a few articles in the Irish Examiner about this article 41.2. And she stated, she interviewed a lady from UCG, and she's a historian, her name is Katrina Clear. And what Katrina Clear stated was that De Valera was inspired actually by a US feminist, Ivy Pinchbeck, who wrote about women and mothers who had to work inside factories. And he was inspired actually by a feminist when this constitution was written. You know, and actually Victoria White, who wrote this, is actually Eamon Ryan's wife.
Mm.
You know, so
So by hearing of that story of women in America with children working in factories trying to support them, yeah. He put into the Constitution shall not be obliged by economic necessity yeah. to engage in labour to the neglect
because
of their duties in the home.
In those times, you can just imagine how hard it was. You know, I mean, I'm sure the economic crisis back there was a lot worse than it is now. Oof. But you can imagine what it was like for those women to be working inside in factories.
But how do you resolve? Okay, but just finally, by virtue of time, but how do you resolve it then for the one third of women, say, for instance, who don't wish to be at home and do wish to pursue a career, whatever shape or form that may be, if everything remains the same? What about women who would find it completely out of date, or indeed maybe even insulting, to leave the wording as it is?
Well, in Article 45 of the Constitution, it gives men and women equally the right to go out to work and to support themselves. So they are looked after in Article 45. So it's not outdated.
But they may be working mothers, I'm saying, for instance.
Yes, as am I.
Yeah. And but you're not among, say, the one third who possibly some of them would find it insulting to be regarded as being neglecting their duties in the home by being working mothers.
But what this constitution does, it gives us a choice, and it puts an onus on the government to protect us, whether we choose to work outside the home or whether we don't choose to work outside the home.
Okay. And have they done that since the constitution was written?
No, they haven't. But that's not the fault. That's not the fault of the constitution. That's the fault of the government. The government isn't doing enough. And in actual fact, I think this whole referendum is so anti-woman. It's you know, it's an attack on motherhood. You know, mothers who want to stay inside in the home.
Okay.
Where is Irish Women, the Women's Council? Where is any group here supporting women who want to stay inside in the home and want to look after their children? Where are they?
Okay.
They're nowhere.
I'll pick it up after 11. Thank you, Katrina. Text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Get involved in the conversation, the Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. And between now and midday, a lot to do, including more of your stories regarding your mammies, your funniest, your most mortifying or embarrassing mammy moments. And we had a great laugh yesterday. Every day this week, we have Sunday lunch for two in the New Yorker Bar at the Cork International Hotel to give away. So a wonderful Sunday lunch. You're going to stay the night, overnight, deluxe room, breakfast the following morning in the Atlantic Restaurant. And of an evening then, when you're up there overnight, you can also have a couple of hours private access to their in-house cinema to relax and enjoy a movie with your loved one, or maybe a nice cold drink while you're doing that. So all that courtesy of ourselves and the Cork International Hotel. International Hotel has a lot to offer this spring, and of course a great place to stay, park and fly if you're using Cork Airport. Food is great there too. So anyway, text 0868104106 with your mammy stories, please, and we'll come back to that around about, 25 minutes to midday. Also, I got a pair of tickets to give away sometime between now and midday today for one of the biggest, glitziest events of the year on Leaside. It is the Marketing Institute Ball. They'll be putting on the Gunas. Actually, they'll be doing it quite differently this year for the Marketing Ball because it's like step back in time to the 1980s. I mean, if it's a fashion statement from the 1980s, I think the event in the Vienna Woods on Saturday night would be very interesting. Big hair. Big hair. I don't know if they roll out a couple of DeLorean motor cars as well while they're at it. Anyway, we got a couple of tickets to give away. I'll tell you more about that between now and midday for Saturday night's Marketing Ball. I think there are still tickets available. So anyway, more on that a little later. Text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106. And if you have been texting over the past couple of days with regards to your thoughts on the upcoming referendums, I'll plough through some more of that as we head across the week and calls as well. But can I just like change horses, if you don't mind, because a lot of other stories happening as well at the same time. I want to chat with Sarah regarding the sale of a product to a customer during the... When was it, Sarah? Was it last week?
The event actually happened in November last year.
Thank you. Okay. Okay. Right. And what actually happened?
Basically, I got a notification in regard to a notification of a chargeback complaint. And basically what has happened is the Bank of Ireland Payment Acceptance has kept all the money that I have taken in on my card machine since the 15th of February to cover the chargeback.
Now, explain to people, because you're in business, obviously you sell things. What is a chargeback?
So basically, a chargeback is when a company queries a payment that they're not, they haven't been familiar with or something. The business that we've dealt with, we had to manufacture some components, right?
Yeah.
So we're dealing with a purchaser, and that purchaser has given the payment, gave the card details, I took the payment. So the company themselves then have now queried that payment, saying it's a fraudulent payment.
And on that basis, then the bank gives them back the money that they paid you for the product that you have sent.
Yes.
Have you sent it somewhere?
Yes, it was delivered free of charge, basically. And then what they've done, they have stopped all my payments on my card machine since the 15th of February. So all my payments that I've taken in on my card machine, they've taken from me to cover this payment.
I see. Yeah, because they need to claw it back from wherever it went.
Yes.
And it went to you.
Yes.
But you're out of pocket and out of product. So how then do you... have that resolve? You get on to the bank, I assume, or you go into the bank?
I went to the bank twice and couldn't speak to the bank manager. There was nobody there in charge to deal with this. So basically, I rang the BOI payment acceptance, and I've been dealing with this now literally all last week, this week, and we've then eventually found the culprit. I have had to send invoices, statements. I have sent the copy of the card receipt that I had kept here. So that has all gone into the Bank of Ireland payment acceptance. So I'm now waiting for them to come back to me to tell me, when am I going to get my money back?
And how much can you tell us, so without revealing the companies, etc., involved in this, as to what actually happened? I mean, it was a legit credit or debit card that was used, because otherwise you wouldn't have paid.
Yes. I don't know how to answer that, because I mean, we're dealing with companies all the time, and I've never ever come across an issue like this. And what gets me is the fact that the payment acceptance company can hold on to my money that doesn't belong to them to cover a charge like this.
So you're out of pocket for a substantial amount of money, and also out of product.
Plus the products.
Plus the products. Are we talking about three figures, four figures, five figures?
We say around €1,000.
Okay. Yeah. And so, again, bearing in mind to protect everybody that's involved in this. Did you reach out to the company whose card was used and said, you know, guys, what's going on here? You asked for this, I sent it to you, you paid me. And what else did you
I contacted the purchaser that I dealt with. I've sent all the information because I rang him yesterday. There was no answer. And I said, look, I sent him a text. Look, contact me urgently in regard to this. So I spoke to him yesterday evening. He said that he will sort it out for me. So I just want to make businesses aware that we'd say these payment acceptance companies can hold on to money.
Yeah.
You know?
But the company said, but the company have told you they will resolve it.
It will be resolved, but I just want to make people aware of what's happening.
Oh, listen, it could be life or death to a company if this happens.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, and I know you're saying that you've been in touch with Bank of Ireland, but it's moving a bit too slowly, is it?
It is. The fact is, I walked into my own bank twice and got no satisfaction. I was just kind of left hanging, you know. Go and sort it out yourself, you know.
What have you? There is a complaints department, Bank of Ireland. You can email them. Did you know that?
I just want to get my money back. That's all I want.
And do you mind if we make a call to Bank of Ireland just to check in? I mean, data protection mightn't allow it, but it might encourage them to give you back your money, else the other company to pay you and keep the product.
Like, I mean, we've been in business with Bank of Ireland since, you know, mid-90s.
It's frustrating. I wonder if many companies. Yeah. I wonder if many other companies have issues with chargebacks that are unfair.
Yeah, well, I'd say there could be. I turned around and basically said to the payment acceptance company, "Is this going down the same road as the British Post scam?" If you know what I mean.
The post office scandal.
Yeah.
I mean, unless all my phone lines start lighting up for the next week with companies that were burnt on chargebacks, I don't know the answer to that. But let's contact them, and I'd love to hear from other people who have had chargeback issues in business. Let's make a call on your behalf and see if it makes a difference here. All right.
Okay. That's all right, great. Girl.
Okay.
Thank
because you want to. Yeah.
You.
I mean, you're in business. You want to be able to get on with your business and be assured that when you sell something, you get paid for it and you'll be able to hold on to the money. It's tough being in business. There's an interesting one that I saw, because a lot of the time customer reviews can have a huge impact on your business and what people say about you and the amount of stars that you get or how happy people are with regards to the service you provide. And I suppose none more so than in a restaurant. Came across an interesting one online there last night, or at least Mick Mulcahy did, in fairness to me. He sent it to me. He said, you might be interested in this one. A restaurant hit back in a spectacular style after a customer went public with a complaint over being charged £8 for fish and chips. Let me stop at this point. £8 for fish and chips is about what? Will we say €12, being generous? I mean, I recently had fish and chips. I was charged €20 for them. That's more the norm, isn't it? 18, 20, maybe €22. But anyway, so I think being charged £8 for fish and chips is pretty good value. But anyway, that was the charge. Despite describing the meal as lovely, on Facebook, the user challenged the Oxton Bar and Kitchen to justify the price. €8. Lovely food, lovely staff, but I can see how you justify your prices. Small fish and chips, £8, and it was small. So I suppose that broke the hearts of the restaurant involved in the customer moaning about the price and the portion size. And they said, okay, and they responded to the review. Okay, Debbie, where do I begin? Out of the £8, our nasty government is charging you 20% VAT, which we collect by law on their behalf. So out of the £8, we are left with £6.66. Out of this, we need to buy the fresh ingredients. One haddock fillet, get the chef to make everything from scratch, delicious beer batter, homemade tartar sauce, mushy peas and chunky chips. The whole cost of ingredients for this plate comes to £2.70. That leaves us with £3.94, for which our pesky chef expects to be paid. Then we realise that the lovely food doesn't float to you on your plate to your table, so we have to pay amazing staff to serve you and to clear up after you. By the way, we pay utility bills. We need gas to cook. You need lights to see the food. And don't get me started on rates. So if £3.94 is not justifiable, you're welcome to recreate it yourself in the comfort of your own home. That's a well thought out response, isn't it?
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Okay, text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106, and in a few minutes time your chance to get a pair of tickets to take you off to the Marketing Institute Ball. The theme of it is Back to the 80s. It happens on Saturday night at the wonderful Vienna Woods Hotel, and Judy Hopkins, owner and partner with Hopkins Communication, member of the Marketing Institute, joins me by phone to tell all. Judy, now.
Neil,
so when you say Back to the 80s, are all of the guests going to dress in 80s style and fashion, or what's the deal?
Well, they can if they like. It's not obligatory. It's optional. So it's a black tie event, Neil. So,
oh, well, then that knocks that on the head then, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they can do... We were thinking, you know, kind of Dynasty, Dallas, you know, Miami Vice. That oh kind of my God.
So for the women then, Dynasty, Dallas would be big hair.
Yeah, big hair, lots of sequins, big shoulders, you know, and I was saying to Colm O'Sullivan, who will be our MC, and he'd be DJing as well for the drinks reception.
Yeah.
I was saying to him, you know, that he might dress up kind of Miami Vice-esque.
Yeah,
you know?
I think he'd make a good stand-in for Don Johnson, don't you?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. And
you'll be a good stand-in for one of the Charlie's Angels, or was that the 70s, yeah, maybe? I can't remember.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. But the band...
Sue Ellen.
Actually, yeah, exactly, Sue Ellen and JR.
Yeah, yeah.
But the band, actually, Neil, on the night, are going to be Spring Break, so they're going to be kitted out in their serious 80s gear as well, and they're a huge attraction.
It was a great decade. The music was just the best. Maybe that's because I lived through it, but it's going to be a great night. So, big event. How many people, and a great charity involved too. Well done.
Yes, thank you. So the charity is Cork Cancer Care Centre, and last year we raised just over 7,500 for our charity Sailing Into Wellness last year. So we're hoping to really beat that and knock it out of the park this year with the charity raffle. And we've got some amazing raffle prizes from the likes of Castle Palace, Skechers, all of the hotels in and around Cork, from your Clayton Hotel Group to the River Lee to the Montanati,
yeah,
to the Dean, all of these, and we have a voucher from Easy Living, and the list is endless, really, in terms of prizes that are going to be available on the night at the raffle. Last year, nearly every table had at least one prize, you know, so it was great.
I was at an event there 3 weeks ago. There was 8 of us at the table, right? And they had all of these raffles. My wife next to me won a prize, right? The person next to her won a prize, and the person next to that person won a prize as well.
And you won zilch.
Nodding.
Yeah, nada. I'm the same, Neil. I never win anything. I remember there was a girl, Claire Collins, if she's listening, she used to come to the ball every year with me, the Marketing Institute Ball, and she would win. Not only would she win every year, but she'd win the top prizes, like the Philip Gray painting or something like that.
And I think there needs to be an Oireachtas inquiry into that.
yeah, exactly. And it wasn't a fix, because I would have fixed it for myself if I could.
No, but I mean, I know the great thing about events like that is they've got these serious goodie bags, right? So at least people get to go in with one of those.
Yes, that's right, yeah. So the coveted goodie bags, yeah. I mean, we, like, in the past, the value of the goodie bags has been in and around anywhere from 100 to 200 euro, you know. So we've got lots of booze in there this year. There's some lovely cuticle oil from Meraki Nail Salon in Glanmire. There's stuff from Barcadia and the Mardyke. There is, again, the list is endless. I could keep going.
That's right. But there's food involved as well, isn't there? And if I know the Vienna Woods, it'll be damn good. Like, four-course dinner as well in the big event. It's an early start as well, 6 o'clock. Is that for canapes and Prosecco?
Snapes and Prosecco, yeah. So we have so we have your wonderful Colm O'Sullivan, as I said, spinning the decks from 6 o'clock for our drinks reception, which is sponsored by Barry and Fitzwilliams. So they'll be doing a Di Serrano and Kylie Prosecco drinks reception. Then after that, Colm will go to the main room and we will start the proceedings with our 4-course meal and a wine menu. And we've our goodie bags, our music from Spring Break, Super Group. And then obviously we will have a DJ at the end of the night.
You're getting great value out of Colm O'Sullivan, you know that. Start, middle and finish.
Oh, sir, I'm telling you something for a heel. I mean, we'll do some outfit changes for him, Neil.
That's
what
right,
do you think?
I think so, yeah.
But yeah, so Cork's Red FM are the radio partners, so that's why Colm is all over the ball. And in fairness, we've a few other sponsors like Johnson & Paris and B2B Signs, B2B Print, GM Media Solutions, Peter P. Photos, and of course ourselves, Hopkins Communications. Well, we've been PR partners for the last 15 years.
Okay.
So
I want to give away regards to Mary as well. I hope she's keeping well and all the family. I want to give away a couple of tickets in a minute and have a bit of fun with it, but is this sold out or are there still some available if people want to get dressed up and go for a big 80s night out?
There are tickets still available on mii.ie, and if you go on to any of our social media, especially our Instagram account run by the lovely Marissa Mills, you'll see exactly what you've got in store. But there's so much that you can win on the night as well, from like Fastnet Tours and Cork Harbour Cruises, Cork on a Fork, you know, the Emporium Group. The list is endless, so go and get the tickets, guys. It's a fantastic night. Not only is it just great crack, but it's a really good opportunity to network, but not in a stuffy way.
I mean, the Marketing Institute, those guys know how to let their hair down. So it's going to be a great night. So rose at mii.ie or else the Marketing Institute website, mii.ie. Tickets are on sale. I'm going to give a couple of them away. It's great to see events back like that, the big glitzy ones. It's fabulous to see everybody getting out and about. Terrific.
Yeah, no, it really is. It's great. We're looking forward to really blowing it out of the water this year now. So we hope to see everybody there, and go get your tickets before they close.
Have a good one. Thanks for taking the call, Judy.
Thanks,
take care yourself.
Bye.
Judy Hopkins with Hopkins Communication. It's Saturday night, kicks off at 6 o'clock. Further details on tickets, rose at mii.ie, should you choose to go now. We've just been kind of thinking out of the box. So we're talking about the 1980s, the music, the yuppies, the big hair, the Filofax, the DeLorean motor cars. I forgot to ask her actually if they're rolling a couple of DeLoreans out in the front, because there is a club actually that have DeLorean cars and you can get onto them. I don't know whether it might just maybe check, and they'll come along with the DeLoreans, which were very much, I mean, who'd want a DeLorean? They were more trouble than they were worth, but they were funky looking cars and featured in Back to the Future. But I'm not talking about Back to the Future. So for two tickets, right, for the Marketing Institute Ball on Saturday night at the Vienna Woods Hotel. Congratulations to Michael Magner. He's president of the Irish International, or the Irish Hotel Federation. Have a good year, Michael. So with that in mind, let's see if this works for us. Let's have a listen to this first. You gotta finish when the working day is done, right? You gotta finish it. So have a listen to this and then you get on the air and you finish it, right? You have to finish the rest of that. Whoever does it best wins a pair of tickets for the Marketing Institute Ball on Saturday night. So get dialing on that and see if you're artistically orientated. Whoever does it best wins the tickets for Saturday night. Pick up the phone, 0818 104 106. Finish the line of Cyndi Lauper's song. Go for it.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
All right, get involved in the conversation or indeed the sing-along. All right, Ray's in Paladuff Road. Ray?
Hello, Neil.
Saturday night, the Marketing Institute Ball. It's a big Back to the 80s glitzy affair. Are you ready?
Okay, go ahead.
All right, you got to finish this for me. Here we go.
What in the world will you say or do? But girls just want to have fun. Oh, girls. just want to have fun.
I like it. It's not the right lyrics, but I like it. I like it all the same, though. So you kind of interpreted it slightly different, right? But hold on there. We'll see how we get on. Kathleen. Kathleen, can you hear me?
Hello.
Hello. No, guys, she ain't there. Maybe she funked it. Mary should be in Cove. They're braver lot in Cove. Mary.
Hey, Neil, how are you?
I'm good. Okay. So I don't know whether you're going to interpret the lyrics differently or not, but have a listen and jump in yourself. You ready?
What in the work is they has done? Oh, girls, they want to have fun.
What in the what?
Oh, girls just want to have fun.
what words are you guys singing? What in the working? What in the working, is it?
What in the world is they... What in the... Oh, no, you're up to catch me out.
Come on, sing it.
What in the world... Oh, you're after.
Let me lay it on you again.
What in the world is they has done? Oh, girls, they wanna have fun.
That's not even grammatically correct.
There you go.
I don't know if I'm going to just give the prize to somebody who actually can sing the right lyrics. Hold on a second. Don't go anywhere. Right. Linda, no, hold on a second. Hang on, hang on. Linda.
Hiya.
Okay, you ready?
I am.
The correct lyrics would be preferable. I mean, you know. Let's have a listen.
Girls just wanna have fun.
Thank you so much. Two counts. One you can sing, and two you can sing the right lyrics. Well done.
Thank you very much.
Thanks all the same, Mary. Thanks all the same, Ray. Congratulations, Linda. Well done. Where are you calling from?
Yay! I'm in Mahon.
All right. Can you get from Mahon down through the tunnel over to the Vienna Woods on Saturday night for 6 o'clock?
I will indeed. Looking forward to it.
Who are you going to take with you?
That's the question. Well, there's a lot of people there now.
Go and have a think about it. Whoever treats you the best between now and Saturday. Something nice to look forward to. You're off to the Marketing Institute, Paul. Enjoy.
Thank you so much, Neil.
All the best.
Thank you.
Take care. I mean, didn't think you'd win a prize by just getting the lyrics right. No, that's not true. All of them could sing as well into the bargain. Can I just mention, and that of course is on Saturday night, but if I could just mention, I'll remind you again on Thursday, but there's a big event happening on Thursday in the Cane at UCC, the Cane Theatre. It's at 5:30. And I know I spoke about it some weeks ago because The Farthest, that wonderful, wonderful documentary about the two small craft that were sent up into orbit back in 1977 are still going. One of them has the gold disc that at some stage in the future, it could be millions or billions of years from now, somebody out on another planet in a different galaxy will come across Voyager and will play the gold disc from Earth, telling them all about us. Well, that's all based on the focus of The Farthest, the documentary. It won an Emmy for the director of it, Emma Reynolds. And on Thursday night, there's a showing of The Farthest in the Cane at 5:30. And I spoke about it a couple of weeks back because Eventbrite was the place to get tickets and it just booked out. They're free tickets. It just booked out. And I'm hoping that everybody, and I posted on my Instagram page, so I'm hoping that everybody who went on to Eventbrite and got a ticket and managed to scoop a ticket or two, make sure you're there on Thursday. And I tell you why. There are many people who couldn't go because there wasn't enough tickets to go around. So if you're lucky enough to have snaffled a pair of tickets, particularly through my Instagram page, if at all possible, please don't let me down on Thursday night. It's Thursday, 5:30 at the Cane. There will be some nibbles and some drinks and stuff like that. And after the showing, there'll be a Q&A between myself and Emma Reynolds, the director. You can ask questions about it. There's the whole story of the two Voyager spacecraft. They're about the size of an average-sized van, and they're hurtling through space. They are millions and millions and millions a year from light years away from us now, and there's a chance that they'll still be going in billions of years when we are all gone and every sign of us on this planet have been eradicated. But I'm just saying that if you have tickets, can you do your utmost and even let me know if you can't go, because I want it to be full, because it has completely booked out and there were people looking for tickets. So if you're okay to go, fantastic. 5:30 Thursday at the Cane. I'll see you there.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Okay, pick up the phone, text 0868104106. The Cork International Hotel has given me some lovely overnights ahead of Mother's Day. We'll also have some flowers, some Shandon flowers on Friday. Thank you to Stacey for those. As always, Mother's Day, a big event of the weekend, and it could be a way of solving your problem of a gift. So Sunday lunch for two in the New Yorker Bar at the Cork International Hotel, followed by an overnight stay in a deluxe room, breakfast the following morning in the Atlantic Restaurant, and access, exclusive access to the private cinema, the in-house cinema, to relax and enjoy a movie with your loved one. Sounds like an ideal night for you and your loved one, ideally for your mam. So it's a nice prize. So tell us your funniest, most mortifying mammy moments. Boy, we had some crack yesterday. Let's see if we can replicate that today. Natasha, good morning.
Morning, Neil.
I'm asking everybody whether they have clearance from their mammy to be telling these kind of stories. To you?
Well, I never got her permission to be quite honest, but I just put on Facebook last night and she's seen the comments, so she knows I'm talking
about
it.
She's good to go. Okay. All right, lay it on me then. Let's see what you got to say.
A good 3 years ago, family, like, went down to the fun fair down fun, and then it was down in the down the marina at the time. And she wore a light tracksuit pants, like, and we were down there for a while, like, we went on a few rides, and after a while she said, oh, I'll go on the sticky wall with you.
The sticky wall?
Yeah, the sticky wall.
Yeah, go on.
But she was like, we'll go on, and we were all like, no, you're not going on. But anyway, she came on with us anyway. Little did she know she was coming off with a ripan the whole way off. We were laughing at first, but then we were mortified because we were all only young. And she wanted to hang around, but we weren't. We were like, no.
Wait, just rewind. What? Tell me how the sticky wall works.
So, like, when you go on to it, you literally just put yourself up against the wall. And the floor literally kind of like drops and you kind of go up, but you're clung to the wall, but not holding on to any bars or anything, like, you're literally stuck to the wall.
Are you spinning around then?
Yeah, you get spun around, like, you're spinning for about 2-3 minutes or so. And like, you're all over the place, your face be going lopsided and everything, like.
Would anybody throw up, incidentally, with all that?
Oh, you would. You'd throw up on the new as well, yeah. Thank God, I never did that anyway.
But if you're spinning around and people are thrown up, oh God, I can only imagine the mess. But anyway, so you literally are stuck to it, and what happened to your mum's pants? They were light, is it?
Yeah, they were very light, and they just started ripping as she was going. And the minute she came off, then it was like a little skirt on her. It was like a skirt on her.
That sounds quite fashionable, no?
No, I know. But she wanted to stay down there so that we could enjoy ourselves. Like, she even sat down on the bench for a few minutes with a jacket around her and was like, go on, you're all right, I'll wait. And we were like, no, let's go.
Too mortified to allow your mammy stay.
Oh, too mortified, yeah. If she bought a spare pants, then we'd be fine, like, but we weren't thinking that ahead.
What did she do next year when the sticky wall was back in town?
Oh, she never went back on it, trust me.
The mortification of it.
I never went on another way down there again.
hang in there. Let's see how you get on. We got Sharon standing by. First up, Joe from Joe's Hair Salon. How are you, pal?
Good morning, Ian, my friend. How are you?
I'm good.
Beautiful, beautiful morning.
It is a gorgeous morning. It certainly is. And make the most of it today, because tomorrow will be different. Listen to me.
Yeah.
I know the countdown is on for Easter. How's the Easter egg appeal going for you? Out in the sand.
Absolutely flying this morning. Now I was in the Partridge Woolen Mills and a few of the businesses gave me Easter eggs and they're April in hand and bring 200 euros and I went off and I'm buying more Easter eggs. And what I'm doing now is buying a few pyjamas and things for Coonley Refuge. And I'm going to get some stationery and things for kids too, to keep them occupied during Easter, you know, in Coonley and Adele and all this area.
Can you get colouring books anymore, like back in the old days, and crayons?
You get loads of stuff and, you know, make up things and make up ducks and Easter eggs and colour in Easter eggs. So, because a lot of customers are dropping in Easter eggs, which are amazing, but when I get cash now, I'm going to buy you know, PJs and
fair play to
things like that. Okay. Colouring books and
okay,
stuff.
So
like
you're
that.
Still you're still then, open for Easter eggs and for bits and pieces for the kids.
Oh,
then.
I'm always open for anything at Joe's. Anything at all.
Joe's Hair Salon.
I don't mind
have
any customers after my story now, Neil, in a minute, you know.
Go on.
My mum has gone to God, Neil. She passed away in 2000. But she embarrassed me the most than I think than anyone ever could get.
Well, if I know you, I can only imagine what your mum must have been like. I'd say the apple didn't fall far from the tree.
We lived in the country and we used to go to school in the town and a yellow bus would come in and pick us up. But in them even time at school, nobody hanging around with the lads and having a fag or something like that. But Maureen Byrne, my mother, used to arrive sometimes on the Honda 50.
Our own right, Honda 50.
And I'd be in the back of the school with the lads having the crack and next thing I'd hear, so she'd be roaring over at me. Never in her life wore a helmet and never wore trousers. She always had a skirt. So she'd have one hand over the skirt and another hand on the what do you call it, the accelerator, whatever you call it. I'd have to get up in the back then with the school bag and she'd have a few messages from town and I'd have to hold them and she could be giving out like mad to me because she might be able to see me smoking or something. But I get you home. So I'd go into school the next day anyway, right, and the lads were saying, how's Flying Fanny?
Fanny was not your mother's name.
If she left, no, Maureen, if she let me come home on the bus and clatter the head of me if I catch me smoking, I didn't mind, but to sit up on the motorbike, skirt would be flying and I'd be arrived home then and the lads going back in school flying, how's Flying Fanny? So that was Mammy's nickname at home.
She was like an easy rider. She thought she was on a Harley or something.
I tell you one thing, Neil, as you say, that she was a great woman because they improvised in those days in the country, like otherwise she'd have to be walking into town and everything, you know.
Was
what
that
I mean?
Her mode of transport for years, the Honda 50?
Oh, that was her mode of transport, yeah. You'd see Flying Fanny coming, she could appear anywhere. And I'd be terrified then at the back of the school having to crack with the lads, you know what I mean?
But she never knew
when she was going to appear, you know what I mean?
Was she a safe driver, like? Did she ever clatter into any of the kids in the schoolyard?
Not at all, she wasn't, no. But what the kids would do then, if you're going, some of the kids would start following you and start trying to thump you while you're on the back of the bike with her, trying to knock you off.
What became of the bike? Did you inherit it?
Do you know, I always remember she gave me the bike and I had it for 6 months before I left home. And there was no insurance, there was no license, there was no tax or anything. We just flew around it. Start it off with the key, Neil. We used to start it off with a coin because the key was broken. And she'd get me then to turn it off because she'd be frozen, her hands be frozen in the winter. She'd win by the fire and I'd have to turn off the key, then it could take me 5 minutes.
The Honda 50, you'd fill it maybe twice a year. Christy Moore had a song about the Honda 50, didn't he? I must try to track that down.
Yeah, yeah. But like, Neil, in fairness, like, I mean, there were great little bikes and she flew around face and she got from A to B, you know what I mean?
Gee, I'd love a Honda 50. You can keep all your mopeds. Okay. I'd love a Honda 50 getting me around town in the summer.
Would no keep, or Neil keep me off it, or mother, or God, I used to be mortified. I'd have a lump in my stomach when I see her and my girl, she'd roll over across her and then the odd lad, she was Flying Fanny, you know what I mean? Oh my God.
She's the only person that called you Joseph then, all the rest of us called you Joe. Joseph's Hair Salon.
When you're in trouble, Neil, you're called
Joseph. That's it. You can absolutely tell by the tone of voice. Hold on there, I want to talk to Maria and see if she's got anything for me. So we've had Sharon, we've had Joe. Maria. Sorry,
Hi, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, so we got an overnight in the International Hotel. We have Sunday lunch for two. We got breakfast the following morning. We got access to the in-house cinema and a beautiful deluxe room. So tell us your own story.
Amazing. So I was about 13 and my mom had like an old Ford Fiesta, you know, and they had like the spare wheels under the car. So we were driving up the Grange Road from Douglas. We were coming off from shopping. And next to all the cars started flashing and beeping and I was like, what the hell is going on? So she starts pulling in and some guy was overtaking her and he's like, sorry, you lost your spare wheel. So the wheel fell out of the car and like it was in the middle of the Grange Road and I was just like, oh my God, leave it. Just leave it. Just leave it. Go home. She's like, I'm not leaving a good wheel behind me. She tells me, go and get it. I'm like, no way in the world I'm going to get
how
that
how far
wheel.
Back was the wheel? Like, it didn't go rolling away or anything, no?
No, what happened? It actually just fell. So it was like in the middle of the road and everyone had to swerve to avoid it. So I was just like, just leave it there, just go. Like, she's like, no, I'm not leaving the wheel behind me.
So she's like, you're not going to get it. I was like, not a hope. So off she went down the road to get the freaking wheel. And I was like, she rolled me up the road. I just couldn't. I couldn't get out the car to help her. I was so mortified. Like, this is 30 years later and I still remember it. Like,
is that the easiest thing to roll a car wheel up the road? Like, it would have a mind of its own, that wheel, you know?
I'm telling you now, my mom is some woman for one woman. She's unreal.
But if you now, she's as unreal. A grown adult, did the very same thing, right? Think about it through your mother's eyes back then. You wouldn't have left. You wouldn't leave the wheel behind now, would you?
Not a chance. Are you mad?
Even if your children nowadays were saying to you the mortification of a drive on.
Do you know what, though? I'd say things are different now, though. I'd say they'd probably get out and help me. I'd still be mortified, though.
It wouldn't happen now because cars don't come with a spare wheel anymore. They just don't.
No, that's true. That's true. But, like, not to mention, like, it was disturbing. Everyone was in the middle of the road. People were swerving and beeping. And I was like,
did any other bits ever fall off the Fiesta, no? Like, you didn't lose a wing mirror or anything, no? Or you didn't lose a panel or something like that?
You know what? No, actually, it was probably a good banger, except for the wheel falling off. And
could have been a very serious accident averted there, thank God. All right. Hang in there. Thanks, Maria. Sharon.
Hi.
Oh, I see we're back to the flatulence again, are we? Go ahead.
Oh, we are.
Yeah.
Well, so this happened years ago. I was only about 16 or 17 at the time. We went down to Dunn's, me and my mammy. And we were down the detergent side and we were picking out just random bits. There was a couple of people in the aisle, but I thought this young fella, oh, he's the lasher.
Before we get to the lasher, how old were you?
I was only about 16, 17 at the time.
So you're a teenager, you're fancying guys and stuff like that. That's the age for it.
Oh, Jesus, yeah. And I was probably quiet. He was mad, give me the eye. And I was giving him the eye back. And she could see that he was giving me the eye.
You were swapping eyes.
We were falling in love, and done. And she let out the hugest fart you ever heard in your whole life. The whole aisle turned around and looked at me. I was perfect. She turned around, she was like, Sharon, you're disgusting, and walked off roaring laughing.
you see, when mams and dads grow up, it doesn't mean that they don't have a sense of humour anymore.
I know, that's it. And my sister rang her this morning and she says, Mam, she's like, Sharon's going on the air telling the story about you down in Dunn. And she was like, make sure now you tell Neil that was only a one-time incident. I'm a lady. That was only the one time I farted.
Sometimes I guess, here I am 2 days in a row talking about farting. Sometimes I guess you just can't keep it in.
That's it, wherever you may be and all that.
So what happened next? Your man walks off laughing. What happened to the lasher of a fella that you gave an eye to?
Oh, he turned around on his heels. That was the end of that.
I'm not quite sure whether farting wins the prize 2 days in a row. Did you eventually get yourself a man, though, in spite of that incident?
I did. I only got married in last December.
Okay. Where did you meet him? It wasn't in the Isle of Dunn's. Where was it?
It wasn't. It was up outside Looney's in Mayfield.
In the queue for the chipper.
Yeah. Oh, no, he was walking past me and I walked past him. I said, oh, geez, he's a bit of all right. And I gave him a text that night. Then I made the move.
Where'd you get his number if he was walking past you?
Oh, sorry. I texted him on Facebook.
All right, so you made the first move. Well done.
I did. I chased him.
There should be a prize in that alone. All right, well, what's your mammy's name?
Sharon Brosnan.
Sharon. It's Biddy doesn't start with an F. Yesterday it was Fiona the farter. Biddy. Sharon doesn't quite work. Hang in there anyway, Maria. Don't go anywhere. Sorry, Sharon. Don't go anywhere. Sharon the shamer maybe might work. Let me talk to... What time have I got left? Okay, I got about 3 minutes. Catherine.
Hello.
Okay, this is the last one I'm going to get on this morning, so we have to have a think now as to which one wins the daily prize. So go on, Catherine, sell me on your story of your mammy.
Well, it was about my son. It was 22 years ago, and, you know, I used to put the blue, or the cistern blocks into the toilet.
The blue ones.
Yes, the blue ones. And anyway, my son Paul was fascinated. Every time I used to do it, he was watching me. So I said, oh my God, he's going to try now and do take the lid off the cistern. So anyway...
Why was he wondering where the blue... Was he be wondering where the blue water comes from, is it?
Exactly.
Okay, exactly. All right, go ahead, yeah.
So he was only about two. And anyway, I said to him, now, Paul, I said, don't you take the lid off the cistern, because if you do, there's a frog in there and he's going to jump out and he will bite your willy. So... I know. Oh, what a bad mother. So anyway,
scarring the young fella in more ways than one.
Oh, I know. So he just looked at me. So anyway, that was fine. We're down in the doctor's surgery. It's absolutely packed with people. Everyone is sitting there. You know, no one is talking to anybody. They're all just sitting there, very, very solemn. So there was a box of toys. So Paul is there. He's playing away with all the toys. Next thing.
Hang on a second. I'm losing it there. I'm losing it there at the important part. I'm thinking you're going to... Can you hear me all right, Catherine? No. I want this to be right. Let me see if I can fix it. Maybe try moving around. I know I'm blue in the face saying that. Move around, see if it improves. Can you hear me now? No, somebody is sabotaging my most excellent call. It's our fourth and final one. I want to be fair to everybody. Let me just remind you that you have another opportunity tomorrow, Thursday and Friday, to get involved in the conversation. Can I also just say that you can be the mammy who comes on to tell the story about yourself as well? Now, it can be your mammy, or you can be the mammy and tell it about yourself. There's no problem there either. So text 0868 104 106 for that, and we'll do some more of these calls in the morning. So we've had Joe, we've had Sharon, we've had Maria, and I know there was one other earlier on, but I just want to see if I can get a better line for Catherine. So they're inside in the doctor's surgery. Appreciate it, Kev. Well done. We're inside in the doctor's surgery. And your, what is it? Paul is playing with the toys.
Yes. There was a box there, you know, in the surgery, with loads and loads of toys in it. And so Paul's playing away with the toys. Next thing, there's a bloody frog inside in the box. So he goes, the frog across the surgery. He threw the frog across the surgery and goes, oh my God, it's the frog. He's going to bite my video. So everybody just started laughing. They went from sitting there, being all solemn and everything. Everyone burst out laughing. They all then turned, looked at me, and I'm sitting there going, God, I have no idea what that is.
That's it. Throw the young fool under a bus, why don't you?
That's it. He's a 2-year-old. Throw him under the bus. So that's what I did. And
you're lucky they didn't report you to Tusla. Young fellow who thinks that the frog is going to bite his willy off is certainly fodder for Tusla, I think.
Do you know what? It was 22 years ago. I was probably lucky it was that long ago.
You have a vivid imagination, though, don't you? I mean, you could have come up with any different reason from not lifting the system.
Anything. But you know what? It was, everyone started talking in the surgery after that, and it was absolutely fantastic.
You never told the truth, though.
Oh, absolutely not. I was afraid my life was going to break the lid of the cistern.
Oh my God. And he's 24 now. Does he still have a fear of frogs?
No. And actually, Neil, I was on the show before. He's actually in Poland studying medicine. So, you know, he turns out all right.
If there's anybody listening in Poland, you know, a Cork guy, Paul from Cork, he's over there, he's about 24 years old. He has a fear of frogs that they'll bite his willy off. So take the mick. And let me put it this way. Take the mickey off him.
There you go.
Take the mickey out of him.
That's absolutely.
I'm going to send you to the Cork International Hotel for an overnight with whoever you choose to take with you. Who would that be?
Oh my God. No. It'll probably have to be the husband, I suppose.
I think so.
Now, when Paul comes home, you never know. I might bring him as well.
All right, well, that's up to you. Don't know when he's home next, but the poor young fella, after a scary start as a 2-year-old, he grew up to be a fine young man. And he's totally intact, not missing any parts.
No, absolutely not. And he's frog-free.
All right, Carl. Stay on hold. We get details. Enjoy the Cork International Hotel. We'll do it all again tomorrow. Get involved in that conversation and all the others. Text 0868 104 106. Have a good day. I'll see you tomorrow.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.